Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
When knights at the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. When knights at the round table, our shows are more mid table. So many times we give and rhyme, but our quite something able. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies, and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up, and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. But we grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazoozradio.com. If you are one of the ones that normally tune in via www.shazoozradio.com, apologize, the site's down. Something to do with the auto-renew of the domain and all that kind of jazz. Trying to get that sorted out as soon as possible. But in the meantime, there's a whole bunch of other places to listen in. Hope you knew that beforehand. Sorry. We'll get it worked out. Anyway, doggone it, got too much on my mind right now. So, I posted in the chat room, you listen to the Knights of the Round Table, by the way, in case I didn't say that. Good morning. I posted in the chat room that the show is live, and a question: what is the truth? Stephen Gibbons posted in the chat room, I would say it depends on the information and the experience you have been exposed to. My truth has changed many times according to the new info or experience I had. So I see what we call truth to me is more of a conscious agreement on the way the majority sees something. Okay, that's... very insightful. Something in this world is going on in Texas, according to what people are saying out there in the alternative media. And a couple of the headlines. I know a few people who live in Texas, but I haven't heard anything for them specifically. And some of them that live in Texas live pretty far away from where the actual hurricane did the most damage and all that. So if you happen to live in Texas and if you know anything about the truth of the story out there, it'd be really nice to know. There's some of the headlines in the alternative media's untold truths about what really happened in Texas, FEMA and Hurricane Harvey. And then there's another one that says FEMA, CIA, DA, FBI hunting, murdering people. There's talk about gun confiscation. There's talk about washing bodies out to sea and stuff like that. I honestly don't know, folks. I don't know what's going on out there in Texas because I don't live in Texas. But if things are going on out there, I think the world needs to know what's happening for real, you know. So the only thing I can say is we need eyes on the... actual scene, you know, people that are trustworthy to relay information. That's the whole thing. When I ask the question, what is the truth? It's kind of a loaded question, I guess, because you get you get a story from the mainstream media, you get a story from the alternative media, you get a story via word of mouth and people's perception of what's going on out there. And if things are as bad as what I've been hearing in the alternative media, we got some serious issues going on. You know, there was this big old hype up about September 23, you know. And September 23 came and gone, and there wasn't no doomsday, so to speak, or rapture going on. Everything just went on business as usual. This internet can be something somewhat of a trap. I mean, I say that if you're going to be out here wandering around the matrix, so to speak, or going down the rabbit hole, you need to proceed with caution and ensure that all the information that you're getting is truth. How do you find out what is really the truth, you know, about a lot of different... There's so many different subjects out there, just too many to name. You know, we go all the way back... via all the different things, Y2K all the way up to present day, all the different scenarios that were played out, doomsday kind of things, and the planet Xers and planet Nibiru coming to smash us, and you know, big meteors from space and all this different. Every time you turn around, there's a doomsday, and the doomsday date just keeps on changing, you know, and it moves and puts people on stress and worry and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not a sensationalist. I just want the flat-out truth of what's really going on. Are we being psychologically tortured? Some would say yes. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me any to know that we were being psychologically tortured. You know, I know that government agencies, or maybe rogue government agencies, they use a lot of propaganda to you know, perpetrate scams and be able to you know, get people rallied to a cause such as a war in a different nation or whatever. Folks, it's got to be a there's got to be some time when people got to draw the line in the sand and demand nothing but the truth. And I know that there's a few of us out here that demand the truth, but we don't necessarily get the truth because it's not the masses that are actually demanding the truth. You know, I keep being reminded of this doggone movie all the time. I can't even remember the name of it, but the guy in the movie's telling the guy, he says, you can't handle the truth, you know. Well, maybe we can't handle the truth. Maybe there's something going on in this world that is beyond everything that we can imagine. I don't know. What I do know is that there are people out there in Texas that are in need, and, you know, I know there's people out there, according to the stories, that are going out there and they're feeding them and rescuing them and helping them out and doing, you know, what good people do. But Three Crow in the chat room said, how would we really know? That's the question. That's the biggest question of all. How would we know? When I look outside my door, I don't see a war zone. And, you know, I see within my own circle of places that I travel during a daily basis, or, you know, even in my own family, I see, you know, things going on, sicknesses and, you know, good choices and bad choices being made, and, you know, basically like a soap opera drama. Everybody's got a soap opera drama in their family. You all got family members that you approve of or disapprove of, or that you're happy with or lost or whatever, and all kinds of life events going on. And even within your own family, sometimes it's hard to get the truth. Sometimes people want to shield you from the truth. They don't want you to know certain things. And, you know, maybe we're not meant to know all there is to know as far as what's going on in the world. Maybe, you know, some people had told me at one point in time that the world is as bad today as it was hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago. That the only reason why we even note that there's ever anything wrong is that we have access to information that we never had before. But that doesn't fly for me. If we got access to information that we didn't have before, and the world is in the type of shape that they're saying that it is, then I think it's about time for the world to get up and start getting something done. You know, we can't sit idly by while people are suffering in the world, and we can't sit idly by while our world is being deteriorated, destroyed, or whatever. You know, I'm kind of like, if you're in the boat, and the boat is your only ride, then you might want to try to preserve and protect that boat. So you want to preserve and protect one another, and you want to preserve and protect the boat that you're in. Otherwise, you know, when it sinks, it's all hands on board to go down with the ship, and that's not a good thing as far as I'm concerned. You know, some people think, well, you know, better off the doomsday does show up and then it's all over and we don't even have to argue about it anymore. But, you know, that just don't make any sense to me, because somewhere deep down inside, everyone out there, you know, who's human and has a heart and who really cares about people and loves life and wants to, you know, experience the whole deal, you know. And it's not like going to the movie and leaving before you finally get to see the whole show. You just give up. You just thought, well, it's an interesting movie, but I'm not taking the time to find out the truth of what's happening at the end. I'm just going to leave, you know. You know, it just don't make no sense to me. Why live life if you're not going to, you know, go the distance, so to speak? You know, some people aren't even that fortunate. Some people, you know, get, you know, trying to be nice about the words and trying to be not doom and gloom. But some people get murdered, you know, and some people get their lives stolen away from them. But the reality of the matter is that when I'm inside my home and I, you know, I hear that the world's gone to heck in a handbasket, and I go look out in the front door. There's no war zone in my front yard. Thank God for that. I mean, I don't want a war zone in my front yard. But as far as me knowing what's really going on in the world, what's really going on in Russia, what's really going on in Korea, what's really going on in Texas, what's really going on anywhere on this planet? We're at the mercy of the truth, and the truth is subject to the honesty of the teller, as far as I'm concerned. You know, what is the truth? If somebody's telling you a story, you know, are they giving you the whole story, or are they giving you half the story, or are they sensationalizing it, or are they trying to scare people? This is a big question, and it's actually a big deal that affects everybody. You know? And so, when I ask this question, I ask it for a very important reason, because, you know, we spend a lot of time here trying to uplift people's spirits and trying to get people to work together hand in hand. And, you know, we don't want to overlook any kind of possible tragedy out there, but at the same sense, we don't want to waste, you know, everybody's time and get everybody all scared for something that's going on that are or may not be going on. You know, these headlines that says FEMA, CIA, DEA, FBI hunting and murdering people, that's a serious accusation, or serious, I don't even know the terminology to use, but it's serious. You know, words are powerful. And when you read headlines like that, if you got any kind of heart whatsoever, you have to be, you know, concerned. You have to want to try to dig into the truth. And one of the problems about digging into the truth is, where do you find it? Honestly, you know, mainstream media, they've been known to lie. Governments, they've been known to lie. Alternative media, they've been known to lie. People have been caught in lies. And my grandpa used to tell me back in the day, he said, boy, your word is like gold. As long as you keep your word as gold, then people will respect you and they will trust you. And I followed that through my life. And I did my best to never, you know, tell lies or half-truths or anything like that. I tried to use the honesty as the best policy. And sometimes that kind of got me in trouble, because there's this little thing they call a white lie. You don't want to tell somebody something. You say, you kind of like not tell them by just not divulging too much information or something like that. But nonetheless, you tell them straight out how you feel about something. There's a song like that, you know, said something about, to the extent, don't ask me what I think of you, you might not get the answer that you wanted to. Truth can be painful. But truth is necessary in order to have those scales of justice balanced out so that everybody's taken care of. Hi, Barbara. How's it going? Hate to ramble on there, but...
Oh, that's okay. I'm just listening to you. I'm trying to look on how many failed doomsday predictions there have been throughout history.
Oh, there's been a lot.
A lot. But yeah, I mean, 2012 was the big one, and God, there was so many before then. I don't even remember. I can't even recall them, but I think by now it's kind of an interesting thing. Like, it's sort of like, what do they call it? Too many times the sky is falling, Chicken Little.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking more along the lines of The Boy Who Cried Wolf, because that story, you know, the kid. Just a little brief cap for anybody who may have not ever heard The Boy Who Cried Wolf. There was a little boy, he thought it was funny, he was up on the hill, and he'd holler, wolf, 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 and everybody in town would come running, you know, and he'd laugh, and then, you know, he did that once or twice, and then finally, one day, the boy's up on the hill, and there really was a wolf there. And he's hollering, wolf, yeah, wolf, wolf, and nobody came.
Well, that's what I was thinking just now, because we're just kind of like, okay, yeah, ho-hum, another end time prediction coming our way, ho hum, ho hum. When is it, you know, when it, is that a plan? So, is that just to keep us like complacent and, oh yeah, another one, you know?
Well, that's what scares me, because if indeed something really did come down the pipe, everybody'd say, oh no, that's just a conspiracy theory. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, they're hauling people off or something like that, you know? that's a serious headline. When you see something like that out there on there, I mean, personally, I think people should be held accountable for, you know, information that they put out there. If it's proven to be false, they need to, you know, be putting a retraction out there or
put in an insane asylum.
Yeah. I mean, there's actually a law in most states that say that you can't run into a crowded theater and shout fire.
Fire, exactly.
Yeah, well,
right.
That's shouting fire. Okay.
Now, there's this guy Harold Camping. This is just one of many. Not, it's a number nine. There's like, I don't know, a number. I pulled up this. Anyway, this Harold Camping, the most prolific modern predictors of end times, publicly predicted the end of the world as many as 12 times based on his interpretations of biblical numerology, and he published a book, but he predicted the end of the world sometime around that year in 1994, and his prediction of May 21st, 2011, that he calculated to be exactly 7,000 years after the biblical flood, and when that date passed without incident, well, he declared his math to be off and pushed back the end of the world to October 21st, 2011.
Great.
Yeah. Haley's Comet panic. Remember that?
Yeah. That's what gets me frustrated because, you know, when they're like talking about doomsday, of course, every time I hear a doomsday deal, even though I know chances are it's a load of bunk, I always keep an eye on that date. Like, I was waiting around for 23 to see what happens, alright? I didn't think anything was going to happen, but nonetheless, you know, I've had this bad habit of taking people at their word. If somebody gives me their word and they ain't proved to me that they've been a liar or, you know, repetitive kind of making dumb mistakes or whatever, I trust their word, you know, with caution, if you understand what I'm trying to say. I don't just go in blindly and believe anything that anybody tells me, but, you know, if they present, you know, their evidence and they appear to not be a liar or, you know, trying to be serious about the deal and there ain't no kind of catch in the background like, you know, hey, buy my emergency generators and stuff and food supplies. Well, then, you know, I might take them a little bit more serious, but I got to keep a skeptical eye on it, and I'll watch just to see what happens. Well, you know, 23 came and gone. Nothing happened, just like all the other dates prior to that. But how many times are they going to be able to get to pull that off, and people still, for some reason, they will grasp on, like you said a second ago, he said his math was off, so he's probably still got a lot of followers. All right, well.
Well, I'm going to tell you another one here. This is interesting, this site. I'll have to send it. I'll put it in the chat, but I just came upon this. So this man, this respected German mathematician and astrologer predicted that a great flood would cover the world on February 25th, 1524, and when all of the known planets would be in alignment under Pisces, which is a water sign. So this, he sent out hundreds of pamphlets. He even built himself a three-story ark.
Wow.
Though there was a light rain on the day of the predicted flood, of course, no actual flooding materialized.
Well, at least he's got a nice ark.
He could probably, you know, had tourists come in and...
Yeah, the day I thought the world was flooding.
Yeah, oops.
Yeah, well, you know, at least he was serious about his belief and he went and, you know, followed through. Some people don't even do that, but...
Well, you know, it's interesting to me. So, what do you think about this? I mean, these people really... something happens to them, you know, and they truly believe that they've gotten a message. I'm wondering, you know, so there's lots of possibilities to look at. So when we look at prophecy, okay, we've talked about prophecy before. I mean, I think it's a good subject because I feel that, well, there are many prophecies. For instance, the Hopi prophecies, many of these prophecies have come true, okay? I feel about prophecy that it's not written in stone. That prophecy, if you're paying attention, can be shifted or changed. Like, for instance, yeah, end of the world on this date or whatever, if you get that prophecy or somebody saying that, you know, well, maybe there's an opportunity to change these things.
Yeah.
Some prophecies, though, do come and have come true. And in this time today where we are, we see many prophecies, you know, Indian prophecies, sages prophecies, and Bible prophecies coming true.
Yeah. Well, I have no doubts that prophecies come true. I have no doubts that people can see things ahead of time, and that in certain circumstances we could actually steer it away. But then there's also the issue of self-fulfilled prophecies, you know.
Well, there you go.
If you're bound and determined for something bad to happen, then, you know, you kind of bring it into existence and, you know, at least give it credence.
Well, like you said before, that, you know, what's going on here that we're being fed all this fear stuff, and then everybody drops into that fear level, and is that, like, self-fulfilling? You know, I mean, are we being pushed to actually do those things?
Well, I'd like to go into a slightly conspiratorial just for a split second here. Because there's a sign that I saw a video about one time that has actually no audible audio speaker per se, but the sign has a way that it can literally send a radio signal, so to speak, out, and you can hear it in your head, but you don't hear it like you would be from your ears, if you understand what I'm saying. It's basically a billboard, and it transmits a signal out, and supposedly they put this billboard out to kind of see how people would react to it, because when they walked by, they heard something, and they looked around, and they didn't see nobody talking or nothing, and then they see this billboard, and, you know, it turns out it's supposedly being projected from this billboard. I can't remember what the actual video name was, or I'd have to look it up again to find the link if anybody was interested. But nonetheless, if that technology really existed, then there could be people messing with people's heads. You know, you hear a voice in your head, you heard it, you know. I heard it. I heard these words. That kind of thing, you know. How you know some rogue government agency or even just some knuckleheads ain't out there trying to... You know what I'm saying?
I like that term, knucklehead. I haven't heard that in a long time.
So,
well, you know, it just came to my mind, that prophecy of the... What was that comet that came by close to the Earth? That was it Halley's Comet that those people took their lives, committed suicide?
Yeah, I think that was Halley's Comet, and there was a Hale-Bopp Comet, too.
Hale-Bopp. The people actually had this guy, this guru, who, look, I'll tell you, if you look at his photographs, you'd think, I'm going to run away from this man.
Yeah. Because he told them they had to leave their bodies so that they could, you know, transmit themselves up to this deal and go for a ride home, you know?
That's right.
And people bought it.
They bought it, and this is something that has been going on for centuries, where people follow these persons and do all kinds of weird things. Yeah, even commit suicide together. And I don't know. It's very strange. People are really... What are they missing? You know, what's missing in people that would follow? What was the other one? Drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. That's why we really seriously need to get eyes on situations. Like, if somebody lives in Texas and they know there's certain things going on in Texas, to bring the truth forward. I mean, man, we don't want the boy who cried wolf coming up here saying, yeah, they're killing people down in Texas, and they ain't really killing people down in Texas. You see what I'm saying?
Was that actually someone was saying this?
Yeah.
I didn't get that. Really?
They said that they were literally washing bodies out to sea. They were breaking dams down there, and they would tell people, you got this, you got an hour to get in there to rescue whoever you can, and within an hour's time, we're breaking this dam. If you're down there, sorry about your luck, kind of thing. And,
well, I do know that they broke up a dam. They let a dam open. And did tell people to get out, evacuate, but I don't know. I don't know anything like as far as this is a deliberate And I didn't go into the news item. I just didn't go into it. It's like, why did they break the dam? What was going on?
I have no idea. All I know is from a couple different people that I happen to watch on YouTube and listen to what they're saying, and to some extent I trust what they say, but then again I'm always cautious because there's this deal out there, a word they call it, a shill or something like that. They'll get out there and they'll tell like false or half truths, and kind of like propagandists would do. All right, and you never know, because anybody, I guess, could be working for a government or a secret agency or something like that. And then you got these these clips, video thumbnails. There's military guys at the front door going around door to door confiscating guns, and then you'll see headlines where they're having a gun confiscation down there. And then there's a one with a red alert: FEMA barges in Texas are jails. And the people telling people not to get on these FEMA barges. If this is really something that's really seriously going on, we could literally, quite literally, not even be aware of it, that we would be in the second civil war here in the United States, because there's militias that are gathering and going down to Texas to do rescues. There's a deal called the Cajun Navy that they get, they take their own boats, like their bass boats and whatever boats that they got, and they'll go down to like flood areas and do search and rescues and bring in supplies and stuff like that. And if somebody says, well, the FEMA, CIA, DA, and FBI are hunting and murdering people, well, there's a lot of people on edge because they've been listening to these stories for years about the government and Illuminati taking over the world and such, and one world government. There's actually prophecies in the Bible about, one world government kind of scenarios and, end times deal. And so, me as a Christian, I gotta be, on my alert. I gotta pay attention, but I gotta not be deceived as well, because I gotta know the truth before I act, if you understand what I'm trying to say here.
Well, I do, and so how does one know the truth? I mean, what I say, for me personally, I think we have a truth meter inside of us.
If it don't feel right, that I understand what you're saying.
It doesn't, exactly, and there's something there that, but you have to pay attention to it. I think we all have been given that. And people after the facts will say, well, I kind of felt something wasn't right, or, well, I got this message, but I wasn't sure, right? I mean, that could be in any particular situation where we are really given a signal, and it's inside. It's not in your head. It's not like a thought. You could hear something or get a message on some level, but it's not an intellectual process, because if you start thinking or trying to get the answer through thinking, I think the monkey mind kind of gets in the way. But to me, this inner truth meter is like a sense or a feeling, right?
Yeah, kind of like mother's intuition or something like that.
Yes, exactly. The intuition that we all do have, that intuition, but not too many people know how to work with or even know that it's available or listen to it or don't believe it.
Well, I kind of have this this deal that, when I go down, driving down a road, if I get this just sudden feeling or thought in my mind that maybe I should take a different path today, I usually listen. I pay attention. And it seems to work out. I mean, of course, I'll never know because I never really took that path. But there have been a couple instances where, had I been in that path, I would have been in that path during a time when there was actually really something occurring, like an accident or something like that. And so, for some reason, I got detoured before I ended up at that place and time where I might have been, may or may not have been involved in an accident or something. So, that's a real deal. That actually happens. And, I've actually had an incident where one of my daughters was in an accident, and they were following us, and I just got this feeling something serious is wrong. And so I stopped the car and I waited for them to come back. Well, when they didn't show up, I turned around and went back towards where they were, and sure as heck, they were in an accident. So I can't say that I saw it before it happened, but I had that sense, that connection with my family member, that I knew something just wasn't right. And so people need to really seriously pay attention to those feelings that you get, you know?
Yeah, I think that there's just a little a tag here on intuition, and it basically speaks to the matter that I was trying to describe. It's a process that gives us the ability to know something directly without analytic reasoning. It's bridging the gap between the conscious and non-conscious parts of our mind, and also between instinct and reason.
Well, I'm a firm believer that there is so much more to this world than meets the eye, and you should keep your mind open to all possibilities, because, you know, even science says that we can only use a small portion of our brain. I mean, that's modern day science saying that we only use a small portion of our brain. And the portions that are either shut off or blocked away from us could be unlimited potentials as far as what we could actually accomplish if we had the full use of our entire brain. And, you know, there's a lot of stories that go back in the past about, you know, people reading people's mind and telekinesis and whatever, all these different things, people hearing people think before they open their mouth to answer the question, that kind of deal. There's some sort of connection that it can't just, I think they said like a maximum of any time past three times that it's no longer coincidence, something's going on. Well, there's been many times I'll be sitting next to my wife, and because of our connection, before she even says anything or asks me a question, I'll answer her question before I didn't say anything yet, you know, is what she says.
Right.
it really happens.
Well, we do have that. We absolutely do have that ability. I mean, I used to get prophetic messages when I was younger, much younger, and something would come to me and it would happen, you know. I mean, these things do occur. It's not as prevalent as it was when I was younger, but I still do have that, you know, I do have, I guess I call it a gift, because, you know, it's your hunch or your gut feeling, you know. It's like a quick sensation that comes into consciousness, in our consciousness. But, you know, it's a really, it's sort of like we have to have this reasoning as well, you know. Common sense, I guess you'd call it, right?
Well, so when you're trying to get down to the truth, it's best to listen to all your senses. And, you know, that's the best advice that I can give at this point in the game, because you honestly don't know what the truth is if you're not standing there physically watching it, you know?
Well, I think that to use the what I'm going to call it a gift of discernment, the word discernment is a very key piece. Now, discernment, again, is not analytical. Discernment is like a feeling. So if you have if you get some message, for instance, and you get an answer, you still have to discern this message. Is this real or is it not? You know, and the discernment to me is sensing or feeling the energy around the response that you got. And if you ask, for instance, you know, asking the universe, is this real or is this false? And then you sense the response. And it's not, again, analytical. It's about energy. It's about frequency. That's the truth meter. You can't look at, there's no truth meter, actually. Like, you can't package this truth meter. Well, you know, you can't send it through the mail, and you can't, it's not a package. It's a sensory experience.
I think one example of what you're talking about is when you're standing there talking to somebody, and you know they're lying. I mean, whether it be the look on their face or their body actions or the feeling that you get just by standing there while they're telling a story or whatever, you honestly know inside this isn't true, all right? And so, you know, everybody's experienced that, I'm sure. Everybody has been able to sense that something isn't right when somebody's telling their version of whatever the truth is at that time or whatever. So I would say, you know, that's probably our only tool at this point in the game that we have access to, is to really seriously use that discernment like you talked about, you know, our senses to, you know, believe or not believe something's going on. You know, if you get, like I said, if you follow your heart and you listen to the, you read certain things, words have power. Words have so much more power than you can possibly imagine. And when I read a headline like FEMA, CIA, DEA, and FBI hunting and murdering people, man, I get a sinking feeling in my gut. If this is true, we got really serious problems beyond what we thought we had. But I don't know, because I haven't been there. And I don't know because the people that I do know in Texas, they live far enough away from where the actual disaster occurred to where they might have got some wind or something like that, but they're not right down there in the mix. But maybe I'll have to ask them to take a little journey down down there and report back the news so we can really know the truth. You see what I mean?
I do. And I also think that, I mean, this is maybe a little deeper than I'm talking about, but there's the unconscious and then there's the conscious, you know, aspects of ourselves, you know. So it's sort of like the unconscious has a lot of data.
Yeah.
A lot of data, right, to drift through and to clarify or not or whatever, but the conscious mind is something different. It's sort of like the conscious mind is right on it, I guess you could say, or your conscious awareness.
Well, those dreams and visions come from somewhere. I mean,
that's right.
Say, I don't believe that we're sitting there projecting these in our own mind. You know, like some people, they go, "Oh, you're just crazy." You know, well, like I said, one time, maybe a coincidence, two times, maybe a coincidence, but three or more times and beyond, there's got to be a point where you draw the line. It's no longer a coincidence, something really going on. And some of the dreams and visions that I've had in my lifetime, they came to pass. You know, I didn't speak at them unless it was something that I felt that, you know, maybe somebody needed to keep an eye on. So you'd hear me saying some words of wisdom just in case, you know, you might want to put a little bit of extra food on the shelf because, you know, you never know, things could go wrong, but it's always good to be prepared, that kind of thing. But I'm not trying to say, look, hey, this day, doomsday's coming, there's this big planet, it's going to slam into the earth, we're all going to die. Well, if that's the case, what are you going to do about it?
What are you going to do? It doesn't matter how much water you have in your
cellar.
Or how many cans of food you have.
And you can have all that gold and silver you want, but you're not carrying it with you.
Well, here we go. Well, so what would be the most important thing to have acquired?
Wisdom.
If, in fact, well, wisdom doesn't even matter.
Knowledge or something.
Well, no. Let's say Armageddon, yeah, the end of the time, the planet slams into us, and there you go. Well, it doesn't matter how many cans you have. Doesn't matter if you have a gun. Doesn't matter. Nothing matters. What would matter? To me, it would be like, get right with your creator.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I missed that one bigger. I dropped the ball on that one. Yeah.
Nobody's talking about that.
That's
today,
definite.
Nobody's talking about that, though. Everybody's saying, oh, prep. You got to be preppers. Preppers this. You have your bug-out bag, and the world is ending, and the whatever's going to happen. The Chinese or the Russians are coming, and I don't know. I just say, you know, people have lost their focus, and, you know, to me, it's sort of like, okay, get right with your creator. You know, you could get your cans in the cellar set up. You could get your water for 2 months. You could get your gun in case, just in case. You could do all that, too, if you want. But I think the key, the ultimate thing is that. But,
yeah,
you know,
I agree.
So did you feel with all this September 23rd stuff and what did you feel? What were you feeling?
I felt like it was just another one of the whole deals. I mean, that's the whole vibe I got off of the entire scenario. when they were talking about it, you know, because I've heard this stuff so many times of so many different things, you know, the government, the FEMA camps and all that kind of stuff. Now, keep in mind, I can't discount it because I don't know the truth. You know, all right. I can do is go by the information given to me, and because the boy cried wolf so many times, so to speak, you know, and when I talk about the boy crying wolf, I'm talking about the mainstream media, the alternative media, and even some of my friends are in panic mode because they saw it on the internet, and, you know, hey, it's coming around. I know guys out there right there that are preparing for the apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I'm with you. You should get right with your creator. You know, there's a saying back in the about in wartime, there are no atheists in the trenches.
That's right. Right? Oh my gosh, you are so right.
There, you know, when you're down there and you're facing death face to face, and you're thinking, well, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is something after this, and if it is, you know, I just basically burned my ticket, so to speak. You know?
I'm even wondering about what you just said. It's sort of like, is it a conscious decision? Or is it just something instinctively within us?
Well, personally, you know, I think it's instinctively, because
I do too.
I've heard hardcore atheists say, oh God, please save me.
That's right.
You know? And I've actually been unfortunate enough to be on the deathbed of a few people in my lifetime, and it's really no pleasure, I'm telling you that for a fact. And I've seen people go out in two different ways, you know, one with a peaceful look and one with the most terrified, hideous, terrible death.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know,
I think it is, as just to get back to that subject, I think that it is something innate within us, Shaziz. I really do. And people want to deny it, or people want to make a statement about, well, I don't believe in God, or maybe the whole system, I think, is pressuring and pushing, today, and maybe it's been longer than recently, is to turn away from this innate fundamental nature.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm going to say it. It's like we have an innate connectedness to a source of whom created us.
Yep.
And I think that you can try to cover it up. You can try to deny it. You can, you know, say, no, there is no such thing, or whatever you want. But inside of you, when you're in the trenches and you're facing death, like you say, that innate fundamental nature is going to appear very powerfully.
Yep. And my advice to everybody out there, look, it's not on me to try to force you, or even convince you for that matter, to believe in a higher power or divine creator or anything like that. That's going to be your own spiritual journey. But what I'm begging you to at least contemplate on is, don't close your mind to the possibility, because, you know, there's a lot to this world that we still don't understand. Even science says a lot of things are magic because they don't understand. You know, the Big Bang Theory, so to speak. Well, it takes three things to light a fire. All right, you got to have a fuel source, an oxygen source, and an ignition source. And so during this time when all this was about to happen, this big magical bang that created all the universe and all that, my question is, who lit the match?
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? What started this process in motion? If you take a 500 piece puzzle and you throw it on the floor, see how many times that you got to do it. Just grab up a whole box with a 500 piece puzzle in there and slam it on the floor. Pick it all up again and do it again and again and again, and count how many times it takes before all those pieces of the puzzle fall right perfectly into place to give you the big picture that's on the front of that box.
Yeah, you know, there's, I'm going to say this, you know, that we don't have to reject scientific logic, if you're more inclined towards that, in order to benefit from our natural instincts, or you want to say the connectedness to source, you know. In other words, I think it's about a balance, finding a balance, within your whole self, you know. I mean, if you're flat out rejecting That's not very balanced. Like you just said, contemplate on it. Think about it.
And my example of the 500-piece puzzle is undeniable scientific and mathematical logic. I mean, think about how many times you would have to repeat the same process of throwing that puzzle on a floor where everything just magically pops right into place, right where it needs to be. To look at your hands. I mean, it's just a mechanical genius. All right, it's incredible what the hands are, and that we're just talking about the hands. We talked about the power of the spoken word, the power of the pen, the power of your actions, and the power of love. Those four things right there, they're unexplainable by science. You know.
Well, yeah, but what you're talking about. People doubt this power of word, the power of thought, the power of emotion, the power of word, and certainly the power of prayer.
It's testable. You can test the power of your word.
It's been proven.
Go out there and say something mean to somebody. Watch the reaction that you'll get. All right? And by the time
or somebody say something mean to you, how it feels. What does that feel like? It smashes you. It could be devastating.
You get a literal physical and a little literal mental reaction when somebody does you wrong. You either feel sick to your stomach,
Have
physical pain.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So think about that power, right? I mean, I've had people say, this person said something, it felt like a punch in their stomach. Felt like they got punched in their stomach. Not, it didn't happen, but it felt like that.
Yeah. And that energy being projected to you via a word or an action or whatever, that's why I say it'd be amazing to follow a smile from your face to whoever you smiled at and follow that smile just to see how far it went. You know, till it run into a grump.
What we're just talking here because we've had these experiences, Shaziz, and in my own inner sense and my own inner knowing, my own truth meter, this feels exactly right on the money. But there have been actual studies done, and you could say scientific studies, you know, people who are, you know, revered for their studies and written up stuff and did blah, blah, blah and all that, and it's like, one example, years ago I was listening to this on the radio and NPR had this study, this people did, this was quite a few years ago and I don't know if these people are still functioning in this way, but a group of people got together and made a plan that within different countries in the world, they would on a certain date and time, all synchronized, sit down and sit in together in each of these different countries and focus on harmony and peace and love. And they did this for 4 years. And they kept track of all types of things within these areas, like major cities. And they noticed that when they did this, when they sat together at these prescribed times, that deaths were down, emergencies were down, police calls were down, various things along those lines just dropped. And the other interesting part that they noted was that the Dow Jones went up. I don't know what that meant, but
if it was such a hoodoo voodoo version kind of deal and magical mystical or where you know like fantasy kind of thing, then why would governments have real programs like astral projectory where they get people to basically have like out of body experiences to see what they come back and say?
Well, remote viewing.
Yeah, that's it. That's the word I was looking for.
Yep.
But they really do have programs like that, all right?
Yes, yes, they do. And the Russians were the first ones to start this program, actually.
So if it was just a, you know, just a, like the...
bunch of hoodoo-woodoo, right?
Yeah. Then why would serious government agencies actually be experimenting with it? Because you can imagine, if you can look onto an enemy's battlefield without even actually having to be there, how much power you would have as far as strategic planning and such?
But, you know, this is nothing new, because in ancient tradition, for instance, these are what shamans or people who had great wisdom or, you know, I mean, this goes way, way, way back, you know, this type of ability. Well, it's nothing new. It's just that the authorities or the scientific minds finally realized that, hey, there is something to this. These people aren't witch doctors and crazy people.
to tell you the truth, I wish that I had that power right now, because I could get my truths answered, you know, instantaneously. I'd send my mind over there to Texas and look around and see what's going on. But,
well, you do have that power. You know, again, I
ain't been able to focus it. If you
well, that's the key word.
Yeah,
focus. You have to put yourself in this state. For instance, for remote viewing or out of body journey or to communicate with someone, you must be in a particular state of being. You know, and of course, mostly people are overwhelmed in their minds with this and that and pressured. And so you're never going to get there with all that. You have to silence your mind. You have to come into, well, some people call it meditation. It is a form of meditation, but it's a particular state of quiet silence and connectedness. And, you know, you want to be, you can practice that, but I'm sure you've done that
well,
in
to
your
some
life.
Extent, I kind of do that when I go out to nature and I...
That's what I was just going to say. You already do that.
Maybe I just need to practice this. That way I can go out there and get the honest truth and come back and report. Hey, look what I saw, man. You know... I hope that
you can do that. I mean, we all can do that. But again, we're inundated with various, information in our own mind. I call it the monkey mind. The monkey mind will not allow you to get any truth.
The thing about it is, we got so much disinformation and so much propaganda going on out there in this world that it's hard. Really hard and a lot of takes a lot of energy to try to weed through everything that we're being bombarded with. And propaganda isn't something that's new. It's been going on for so long. I mean, that's how wars get started, by going and telling, like the old Jerry Springer thing. Hey, did you know what this guy said about you? And that guy, he goes over and tells the other guy that is supposed to be part of it. Yeah, you know what he said about you, you know, agitating. Getting this thing going on and then, you know, basically making it happen.
Well, you know, there's even propaganda about what we're talking about, the abilities that we have.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's been a plan to basically usurp that innate information connectedness, that innate wisdom, that innate, you know, knowing, the truth meter.
That's what I was trying to work towards, is that, you know, the governments, they know a lot more than they say. Obviously, because they got the funds and the resources to actually do the testings and all that kind of stuff. And if you wanted to try to convince somebody that things aren't possible, like free energy, for example, there's nobody in this world that could ever convince me that energy is not free, because I paid attention in school and I paid attention to nature. However, if you go out there and you try to explain this to people, the majority of everyone you talk to believes so wholeheartedly that it is not possible, that it defies the laws of physics, and because the scientists say, or the government say, you're just crazy for saying it. You know, and that same thing applies with what we're talking about here. You know, they wouldn't, you can read people's minds. Well, how do you explain when I'm sitting next to my wife on the couch and I answer a question before she even opens her mouth, or she does the same thing to me? We've had a spiritual connection, my wife and I, since the day we met, and we clicked. And when I'm sitting out there and I'm actually talking to turtles and frogs and nature, you know, and people, normal average Joe would look at me like, you're just nuts. Well, I'm getting a physical response in my body, not just in my body, but I'm watching a physical restoration of the land that is around me. I'm watching wildlife move in to where they weren't there before. The land was sick, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
I do, but you know, there's the propaganda again, where people could actually say to you, you're nuts.
Yeah.
Those people fell for the propaganda.
Well, and I would say to those people, until you get out there and honestly try it, you know, it's like this, there's this deal called the rice experiment, and I have never tried it myself, so I can't say, you know, basically you take, you cook some rice, you put some rice in one container, you put some rice in the other container. One container you label with the word hate on it, and the other one you label with the word love on it. And then every day you go and tell the one you love how much you love it, how wonderful and beautiful it is, and then the other one you just despise and say terrible things to. And the people who've done this experiment, you know, have seen that the one that they that has all the hate, or even the one that's ignored, are rotting faster than the one that they're projecting all the love. But if you go into that experiment with any kind of doubts whatsoever, you know, in my book of faith, Jesus said that if you had the faith of a mustard seed, that you could move mountains. You could speak to that mountain, and you could tell it to move, and it would move. Well, how many people do you actually believe, literally, that if they spoke to the mountain and said that you can move, then it would move? There's a doubt. If there's any kind of doubt in your mind, then it is not going to happen. That's what faith is all about. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And I work with people about manifesting, how to manifest things in our lives. And because we are so programmed to have doubt, that the doubt is an energy. And let's say, working with health, for instance, you know, like say you've been diagnosed with a serious illness and you want to do meditation and you want to manifest health and well-being. You have to pay attention to what's going on internally as far as a reaction when you say something positive. If you've been programmed, which many people, I would say the majority of people have been programmed to say, well, once you're diagnosed with cancer, forget it. That's it. You're going to die, or whatever it's going to be. It's the worst nightmare, okay? So now a person says, well, I want to meditate, and I've been diagnosed with this illness, but I hear what you're saying, and I'm interested in this meditation process. I'm interested in manifesting health and well-being and getting rid of this sickness. And so, okay, so you sit them down, and there's certain things you go through. You know, you want to get into that meditative quiet state. You want to shut up the monkey mind. Because the monkey mind has the program that says, this is crazy, this is never going to work, we're sick, we're dying. So that's an imprint, okay? So now you're going to say to the universe, and I always say, when you speak to the universe listens, okay, and responds according to the frequency or the energy that you're sending out.
Yep.
So you could say, let's say this is a program, say, okay, my immune system is healthy and in harmony. Just a simple sentence. Now, you put that out to the universe, but following that is the wrench in the works, because your monkey mind comes in and says, that's not true. We're sick. We're dying.
Yeah, so and you just counteracted your own prayer.
That's exactly right, but most people don't pay attention to that interference. And we are so programmed. We are so programmed to doubt the power of prayer.
Well, yeah, because one thing is, the doctor, he got to be a doctor because he went to all this school and everything, and everybody is under the impression that doctors know, you know, more than they do about their own health.
They're the gods. They're the authorities. They paid a lot of money for that piece of paper and that black frame they have in their office that says, I am the authority.
Yeah, and so when the doctor says, go home and prepare to die, then people believe.
Oh, my God. People go home and they die.
Yeah.
Now, there's this couple, this Dr. Carl Symington and Dr. Stephanie Symington. Years ago, they started this clinic because they were very interested in what happens, why do people, when they are diagnosed with the similar, let's say, a chance of life or death, when they have been diagnosed with an illness, and many people, they noticed in their clinics that certain people, you'd have like Tom and you'd have Jerry, both of them went through the program. And they both had a certain percentage to continue life and to go into remission. But Tom went home and was so in despair and had no will to live and believed that he was dying, so he soon didn't make it. He did die. And Jerry went home, okay, same opportunity that Tom had, and he thrived. So they wanted to, what's going on here, you know? And they came to the conclusion that, yeah, there is the message that whatever we believe, in a way, we kind of create that. It's like you want to say self-fulfilled prophecy, you know, but they found that there was a big difference in the, number one, the will to live, and number one, the believing and the faith that you have, right?
Yeah, and on that note, there is actual scientific research and evidence of what they call the placebo effect. So for those folks that don't believe in a higher power or don't think about, you know, how powerful your mind really is, they have actually had experiments. There's a couple that I know of, one of which they had there's supposedly a drug, and this drug was supposed to get you high. All right, but it was nothing more than a sugar pill. Both of them got a sugar pill. But the other, when the one, he took the pill, he was high. He was higher than a kite, man. He was all like, ooh, yeah, I'm seeing all kinds of cool colors. Yeah, everything's wonderful. And the other one's like, you know, I ain't feeling nothing, man.
They call it the power of suggestion.
Yeah,
right?
And then there's other instances where they would tell people, they would actually diagnose them with some sort of sickness or whatever, or they might even actually have a physical sickness that have a number of cases going on, and they would give one a sugar pill and one actual medicine. So they could actually test whether or not this medicine was really working or whether people just believed it was working and so on. But there were people that believed that they were the medicine that they got was the real medicine, and they were literally cured.
Yeah.
So, you know, those, after so many times, like I said, the coincidence factor.
Well, here's an interesting thing for you. In their studies, the Symington studies, I don't know if you remember this. It was in all the papers and whatever, big magazines years ago, about this boy who was diagnosed with a brain tumor, inoperable brain tumor, and the Western medical people said to his parents, we can't help him, we've done everything, and just prepare him to die, you know. But they found this, the Symington's clinic, and they went there, and he started doing the program, and one of the parts of their program is to learn how to meditate and visualize. The visualization, here's the system how it works, is you as a patient, you have to visualize your own immune system. You have to like come up with what does this look like. Now, in some cases it was, you know, soldiers with spears that were killing the cancer cells. Another one was sharks that were eating the cancer cells. I mean, people came up with their own, right?
Yeah.
This boy, you remember Pac-Man?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just thinking Pac-Man.
Yeah, okay, there you go. I was sending that to you. So Pac-Man, that was when Pac-Man was first came out, really, and it was very popular. And if people don't know, I don't know fully what Pac-Man is. It was like a little circle with a face.
Yeah, little he's running around chasing, the ghosts were chasing him, and then he'd eat a power pill, and then he'd go chase them. But it's still amazing to me that you just said Pac-Man. I was sitting there thinking about it.
I'm not surprised. Okay, so this boy, his visualization 3 times a day, because that was required for like about 20 minutes or so, was. So he'd sit and he'd go into this meditation, into this place, and in his visualizing, he saw this little Pac-Man critter, and this little Pac-Man was eating up all the sick cancer cells, chomping them away. He did that for like, I don't know, months, and he eliminated that tumor in his brain. Now, this was written up in scientific magazines. It was all in Time magazine, and then another guy had a tumor on his liver that was really quite serious, and he also found the Symington's clinic. He remembered, sort of like you're asked when you go to meet them, the program, what they put you through. So you need to find something that you believe in or that you have a memory about that is very important to you or significant in your life. So the Pac-Man was important to that boy, and this guy came up with a pink eraser, because he said, when I was a kid in school, I used to love those pink erasers. Do you remember those big... All right. He sat every day, you know, three times a day, with his visualization, with a pink eraser, erasing the tumor, the sick cancer cells on his liver, and he did it.
See, I'll tell you one of the reasons why I believe that. First off, scientifically, the way that your brain works, sending signals to your nerve endings, and the way that your nerve endings communicate with your brain back and forth. If you stub your toe, your toe will send a nerve endings in your toe will send a signal to your brain saying, hey, you know, there's something going on down there. You need to take a look at it and address it. And I learned a long time ago when I used to study martial arts back in my younger days, that there was a way that you could literally control pain using your mind.
Once you addressed,
I stubbed my toe, I realized that it's not bleeding, it's not hanging off or anything. I'll take care of it later, put some ice on it or whatever. You know, the throbbing in your toe will stop. All right?
Well, I'm going to give you an example of a woman I worked with, okay, who had breast cancer, and she came to me for help. Now, I laid her down on the couch, and I said, we're going to go inside. You're going to take a journey inside, and you're going to find what your immune system looks like. You know, and I told her those examples of the Pac-Man and the pink eraser. I said, but I cannot tell you what you must find. You have to find this. And this piece is crucial. The person must find out. So it's self-empowering, okay? It's sort of like if I dictated to her what she's going to focus on is her immune system, that would be my vision. She needs to come up with this empowering piece. So I calmed her down, told her to take some breaths, and she's lying there with her eyes closed, and I said, okay, when you see something, let me know, okay? So she's laying there, and we're quiet. It's all quiet. And she gets this kind of puzzled look on her face, you know, and I said, what's going on? She says, well, I entered into this room, and in the room there's this huge desk, and there's this little man sitting behind the desk, leaning back, his feet are on the desk, and his hands are behind his head, and he's just back, leaning back. And I said, okay, ask him who he is and what he's doing. So she goes quiet again, and after a second or so, she gets another puzzled look on her face. But let me tell you first about this woman. She was very outgoing, very happy, very bright, you know, really happy person. When before we started, I said to her, Donna, do you want to live? And she said to me, well, of course I want to live. I said, okay, good. I'm glad to hear that come out that way. So then we put her through, and she found the little man, and when she asked, I said, well, what did he say? And she said, well, he said, I am your immune system, and when you get serious and want to live, I will get busy and get to work.
Well, that's cool.
But she was confused about that, because she had blatantly said, no, I want to live. I said, okay, so this tells me there's something hidden here that's preventing her sense that she wants to live. There's something intruding here. There's something hidden. And this is a hidden message, okay? We have to pay attention to this, because it's just like the wrench in the works when you say my immune system is healthy, and the voice in your head says, that's crazy, we're dying. So there's something there that we must find, okay? So we did find it. I said, okay, we're going to go a little deeper, and there's something that happened to you a long time ago in childhood, okay? And we did discover it, and something happened to her in childhood that was so devastating that she determined that she did not want to live.
And so
it
that was
so awful. And that was an imprint, and that remained hidden deep inside of her.
See, I believe that is, I know because of personal experience that things from the past that you embed on yourself, it's kind of like carrying a grudge. It takes a lot of energy to carry a grudge. And until you find some sort of forgiveness for yourself or others for things in your life that went bad, you have a physical response. You know, a sickness, your brain won't shut off, you're constantly upset, and when you're upset, your immune system's not functioning like it should.
Yeah, but there's also an imprint, okay? Yeah. So that cellular imprint, it is a cellular imprint. It is embedded cellularly within us, and we don't even know it. It's sort of like you could come out and you could say, well, life isn't worth living. Life sucks. Life isn't worth living. Life is horrible. You know, my life is horrible. It's not worth living. Okay, that's a very powerful imprint. And when we're little, things can happen to us, you know, devastating things, violence, abuse, or whatever, and we make pacts with ourselves. We make an unconscious pact. Yeah. And that remains in the cellular imprint. So when you are saying, well, I want to live, that imprint will be activated and say, well, wait a second, no, life isn't worth living, remember? It's I don't want to live. I don't want to live here. So we had to clean that up, which we did, and she's doing fine. This is many years ago.
Well, there you go.
It's quite amazing. It's just extraordinary to me. But, you know, the scientific world and the medical professions are discovering these things, and they are now more and more utilizing, like Western medicine is more and more utilizing these so-called woo-woo types of stuff, you know, that they wouldn't even think about.
I've seen a lot of different hospitals moving more to, prayer healing and stuff like that, along with traditional medicine.
That's right.
And
or music, using music during operations, you know, or people using their affirmations and their headphones while they're under, you know, it's like when you're under, when they put you out, you're still aware.
Yep. It's there's really a lot to that. So, you know, to the whole truth of what is the truth out there, when you hear stuff like this and you actually don't know and you formulate a belief from the information that you've got out there, it can really seriously physically affect you. Physically, mentally.
You know, what you just said, see, here's the piece. It's like, we call it the great mystery. You know, we don't know fully this great mystery. We may get little tiny pieces of it. But if you are downright set and stubborn and cement in your beliefs, and you will not even go there, you will not even open to even a possibility, well, there you are. What can I say?
There's a movie out there called Zeitgeist, and I saw that.
Yeah,
I despise that movie more than anything in this world because of the damage that it had done to some people that would have otherwise had faith.
Yes.
Now, I understand that there are and have been throughout the history of time corrupt people that, you know, you wouldn't trust what they wrote, you wouldn't trust what they said, and discrepancies or whatever. But like I said before, I wasn't there the day of creation. I wasn't there the day of the Big Bang. I have never been to space. I couldn't tell you whether the Earth is flat, whether the Earth is round. All I can tell you is from my perception of information that I've gathered throughout my entire life and what I base my faith on. And I understand the meaning of faith. If you have any kind of doubt, then it's not true faith, and you can't do miracles if you don't have true faith. It's healing yourself. You got to believe you can heal yourself, or you're not going to be able to heal yourself. And if you're laying hands on somebody like some churches do, and even in your mind there's a doubt that laying of hands has not transferred the energy to heal that individual, then that individual ain't going to be healed.
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work, period.
And then you're going to leave that church, you're going to leave the group of people who have the faith, who are laying on hands, and you're going to spout out, it didn't work.
It's
a bunch of crap. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how that goes.
And then those folks out there who wanted to steer you away from that anyway would use that as a reference. Look, you laid hands on that person hundreds and thousands of times, and they still died. You know?
That's right.
And it wasn't because you know, here's another thing. This is one of the things that aggravates me the most. I hear this from a lot of atheists and even agnostics and sometimes, even Christians, I hear a phrase that, you know, if God was so loving, why would he allow children in this world to starve to death? Why would he allow wars and sickness? And I say, oh, hold on a second, back up. Because when you start playing the game, there's a set of rules that are set down when you start playing that game that says that, you know, you get so many turns and you can do this, but you can't do that. And so when you go to sit there to play Monopoly or whatever and you've read the games, read the rules, then you know what's to be expected. Well, when this whole game of life started, we were given some little sets of basic commandments or whatever, the golden rule that was imprinted onto the human heart or whatever, that says it's not right to kill and steal and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It wasn't God that went out and started killing people. It wasn't God that allowed a baby. If we have knowledge that there's a baby in this world starving to death, especially here in the year 2017, where we have access to helicopters and jets and boats and all kinds of vehicles and tools and technology, there's no reason why we as a society can't make sure that there is no starving baby, that any baby that's hungry gets fed, anyone that's homeless gets sheltered. It was man that chose to allow that
baby
to starve.
And you know, it's fascinating to me too, because everything is in Creator's hands.
Yeah.
You know, and who's to say that what is the test here, and I believe these are tests that everyone meets throughout life. The test is, let us see who steps up to the plate and who feeds that child.
That's right, and the free
and
will.
And let's see who doesn't, and let's see who turns their back or ignores or just has no empathy. So this, to me, is all part of this. You can't say, I believe there should be no starvation today in our world. No one should be starving. You know, but again, when you take individuals, when somebody says, why would God let that child starve to death? Or why would God let this tsunami come or this hurricane come? Why, you know? And there's so many factors here. There's so many parts to look at. It's a big puzzle. We don't have a complete answer, but we are all participating.
Yeah.
And when you participate, either positively or negatively, that's what you are creating.
Yeah.
So it's not just that one incident. It's many, many, many circumstances that come to the point where this happens or that happens.
Well, free will or freedom of choice. Every morning when you wake up, you got a choice of what you're going to do that day. It's your life. You could choose to either go to work or not go to work, to abide by the law or not abide by the law, be nice to somebody or be hateful to them. You got that freedom of choice. And if you know that something's going on in the world, maybe it's out of your control, but you still could use other powers that you have at your disposal, such as the power of word, like we do here, trying to spread information. Hey, you know, check on this area over here. Somebody said that there were starving children in this area. Let's see if we can get this resolved. And that is the power that we had. God didn't allow these people to starve to death. It was the greed of man. It was the greed of man that decided to fight over resources that are so abundant on this earth that some of us look at this as ridiculousness, because the earth is 3/4 covered in water. If you're standing next to the ocean dying of thirst, it doesn't make no sense to me, because basic science shows you how you can purify that water, remove the salt and drink it. And if I'm lying, if my truth isn't the truth, then explain to me how people in Dubai literally built the land that their skyscrapers on, and huge desalination plants that they not only cool the buildings down with, but flush their toilets and have fresh drinking water as well. And it came straight from the ocean. Science says it. It's proven.
Listen, I don't know if you remember. I don't know the circumstances or when this happened, but there is a story about men who were shipwrecked, and they had one little boat, and they were out there on the ocean with nothing, no food, no water, nothing. And, of course, you know, you can't drink the water, but they started praying. They started praying for water. They started praying to be able to drink. I don't know the circumstances, but actually they survived by drinking the water that became purified through their prayers.
Well, and I don't doubt that one single bit. Look, even in a scientific fashion, there are ways that you can use the basic science of heat and evaporation to literally purify that salt water while you're sitting in that boat using materials that are probably somewhere around you, plastic, clear bottle or whatever. You can do this, you know, by evaporation.
Yeah, but this was just prayer.
Well, I was about to get to that.
This was just prayer, but you say just prayer.
Scientifically.
But it's not just prayer. It's like faith.
Scientifically, the signals that you send out of your body is the equivalent of a radio wave. All right, you're a thermoelectric generator. Everybody out there has water in their body. Everybody out there has electricity.
70-some% were of water. Everything has water.
And so when you're thinking, you're actually putting off an energy signal. And that energy signal, even if you wanted to say it was just science, in the form of a prayer, we already know that water can be affected by a radio wave.
It's by words.
Yeah, the microwave. Yeah. And they even say that water has memory, which I believe
that
as well.
It does have memory. The water has its own memory of purity and harmony. It's the original imprint of water that Creator made everything to be in that sense, all right? Harmonious, healthy, and well-balanced. It's been corrupted through violence, through pollution, through various other things, and we know in our way, in our tradition, we have water prayer songs, and these are women's ceremonies specifically because women have connectedness to the water because they carry water in their womb, and in the tradition of the Indian people, women were the keepers of the water. So, in this prayer ceremony, it's a chant, okay, and it's used with birch clappers, like birch branches that are prepared in a certain way because birch is a water, not only a water element, but it's also a women's medicine. And when you chant this sacred song, it heals the water. It returns its original memory of harmony and balance. It actually changes the molecular structure.
I believe it.
Well, this has also been proven by this man Emoto, who took photographs of water. He to prove it. I mean, he took water polluted, severely polluted water, and he's
also the one that came up with the rice experiment.
Oh, that's okay. That's the one.
Huh.
Well, what he did was he froze the water and then he took slices, very thin slices, and under microscopic, under the microscope, he would see that these very thin slices, the structure of them, right? And he saw this polluted water originally was the structure. I guess you'd call it the geometric or the sacred geometry of particles, okay?
Yeah.
And so it's like snowflakes. These particles were, you could tell that they were corrupted. They weren't harmonious. The sacred geometry was out of sync. It was not harmonious. And then he did experiments with words. So he put that water, the polluted water, in a bottle, and he put a sign on it, I love you, or he'd constantly say, like you said with the rice, he would say, I love you and thank you. Thank you, I'm so grateful. And then he'd go back and he'd freeze the water again and he'd take a small slice of it and he'd look at it under a telescope and he'd notice that this became harmonious, that the little snowflake or the flake of this water frozen would be beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And then he did the same water, used the same water, and he put it in a bottle, and he'd put it, I hate you, or he'd say, I hate you, or I despise you, or you're sick, or whatever. And then he went back and froze it again and took little slices of it, and he saw how corrupted it was again.
Yeah.
This is scientific proof.
Well, even that, there are senses. We got all these senses, and even people who don't want to believe in some sort of divine creation or nothing like that, they can't explain why it is that if you're standing there anywhere in this world and somebody comes walking up behind you, that you can literally feel their presence before they actually put their hand on you.
That's right.
You know, whether...
Well, because we're beings of energy. We
yeah.
are beings of energy and frequency, and your words have a frequency, a particular energy, even your emotions and your thoughts.
Yep.
That's how powerful we are, Shaz is. That's how Creator gifted us to be so powerful, to make change, either positively or negatively. There you go, free will.
Well, it said in Genesis, according to the good book that I like, that said that God spoke into existence the world, and He said that He made man in His own image. And so with that said... if you were to read something straight up, literally, we're made in our Creator's image, which makes us creators. You know, we create our own pain, our own suffering, our own destiny. With the power of our words, we can start wars. We can literally raise somebody's spirit up to the highest points of heaven or drop them down to the lowest, darkest abyss of what we perceive to be hell.
And well, you know the word divine... You know the word divine or sacred, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of have an idea what that word means. Could you describe it, what you think, what the word divine or sacred means?
Well, in human terminology, it's really kind of hard. It's really kind of hard to put to words, but if you take a look at the grand scheme of things, everything, I mean, every single individual, every single plant, every single animal, and you think about how amazing the design of every single thing is, even if you want to believe it was a complete and utter accident, it must have been such an amazing accident, a once in a trillion, 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 trillion chances that everything came out just the way that it did. Or it was literally a being or a spirit or a system that had order and truth and love to it that literally gave us something beyond words. That's why I'm having trouble saying... what the word divine means to me. I know what the doggone, Wikipedia or encyclopedia would say about it, you know, a higher being and stuff like that, but to try to literally explain, you know, the equivalence of God or the miracle of life itself.
We don't have the language, do we?
No.
So we weren't given the language to describe this because it's part of the great mystery. And how can you describe the great mystery? We could say, oh, it's the great mystery, and we kind of have an idea of what that is. The mystery is the unknown, okay? It's the unknown. There's no words for it. All we can say is the great mystery, you know? The same thing with divine or sacred, but we have an idea what we've been told it is, right? We've all been, like the Wikipedia will tell us, okay, what the divine means or what sacred means, okay? So we have to come to conclude ourselves with only that information. You know, to me, it is the unknown, but it is, you know, and I would say in relation to Creator, the intelligence, there is an intelligence. I mean, how can you deny what many people do? The intelligence of creation. I mean, the synchronicity is extraordinary. The sacred geometry, the golden rule, everything consists of this. You know, I mean, now scientists know this. The string theory, the connectedness, the energy, the frequency, it's mind-boggling and indescribable. We don't have the language, but I kind of try, like you're trying, and I say, you know, there is something divine that to me is an intelligence.
It's beyond human comprehension.
And it's a frequency. I try to go, it's a frequency of pure, unconditional love. A frequency of the highest, the frequency of the most high, and that doesn't tell you anything either.
No, it's taking all the good things in life that wrap them all up into one word that we don't know the name of. We
so
call,
when we say we are created in the Creator's image, to me that means that we are sacred, that we are divine, that we are that. We are that high, that I call it the superior intelligence that, you know,
just
that
in,
exists.
Just in the words that God created man in his own image. Now, God being able to create all that we are, that we see around us, the water and how powerful it is, and the land and all the elements of the earth and all the wildlife and us in general. God was so amazing that he was able to do all this and then turn around and give it to us, his creation, and so
because we are that creation.
Yeah,
you see, it's not like he gave it to us. We are born of. We are created.
Yeah, we're
from.
Part of that glory, man.
Exactly. We are part of that source. Source is ever present, meaning that divine or sacred or awesome, whatever you want to call it. We are that.
And I think to just pass it off as random chance is to literally deplete your potential of what you could really become, because some people think you're born, you live, you die, and that's it. That's all there is to it. Then that makes most of what we got going on out here, you know, really not that important. We just want to try to keep our heads down and have a good time and enjoy life while we can, and that's that, because it's only a one-time go-around. You see what I'm saying?
Well, here's one thing that may have screwed up the whole mess. Or let's say here's something that may have screwed up this, we are created in God's image. Ego.
Yep.
Okay. Creator gave us, let's say Creator, like a mother. And I always say Creator, Mother, Father, because I don't believe it's a male or female. I believe it is a divine, supreme intelligence, a frequency of the highest, most divine, unimaginable.
Yeah, and my words just come from my upbringing, because I was always raised to believe God was this man in the sky.
Well, exactly. Well, that's what, when we say we're made in God's image, that's where people go. There's a guy in the sky with a white beard and a white robe, and he sits on a throne. When I say we're made in God's image, okay, I'm saying that we are born of, we are created, we were sent out as a particle, part and particle of this being. So we are one with, you know the words, one with?
Yeah.
That's what we are. We're not separate.
Well,
we are one with, but we've been given ego. Yeah. Why? Why were we given ego? Ah, that's a good subject.
because man got, like my friend up here at the top of the Shaziz Radio website, it says, nature needs no improvement, only the arrogance of man requires change. That's what my friend simply said.
There
Steve,
you go.
Words
I
of wisdom.
Believe that it's because, okay, it's sort of like we love our children. We give birth to our children, and we send them out into the world, okay? We know they're going to fall down. We know they're going to make mistakes. We know they're going to have an opportunity to do something good after maybe they've done something wrong. Hopefully, we hope and we pray for them that they will find the pathway that we want them to find, which means that they become a good, beautiful, sacred being that they really, truly are, and see others as that.
Yep.
I feel the Creator, Mother, Father did the same thing. Okay. I'm just birthing these beautiful beings. These are sacred children, and I know they're going to have a struggle. I know I'm sending them out in the world, and I'm going to be there for them no matter what. They're going to be in my prayers and in my thoughts, and if they turn to me, they can always come home.
Yep.
They can always come back home. I'll be there for them. They can always turn to me and ask me for help. That's a parent. That's a good parent, right? Healthy parent. But we all were given ego and free will.
That,
so this is something, this is about, to me, it's about, you know, the opportunity as a human form rather than a spirit, okay? The spirit is embodied within us. That particle of our Creator is embodied within this human form.
And to see what we're going to be doing with this gift that we've been given.
to see what we're going to be doing, the choices we're going to make.
Yeah, and so when I say what is the truth, if anybody's ever listened to me, I tell everybody I'm a Christian because that's where my faith is, all right? But also I tell everybody that I don't discount your beliefs. I don't discount your lack of beliefs. It's not for me to say. I have to find my own spiritual truth, and you've got to find your own spiritual truth. And all along this journey that you're taking and I'm taking and everybody's taking on our own journeys, whether we believe in a higher power or not, we're finding along the path of our journey little truth nuggets, like the word love, you know. It's universal. People know love when they see it, because love is somebody taking and sacrificing something to ensure that somebody else is comfortable, or taking and doing an act of kindness such as smiling on them. And so we all know that you don't even have to say the word love. Love shows itself every time it's present. You can feel it. You can feel the vibration, the frequency of it. You can feel the energy from a person when they come in the room and they're all smiley and happy. Or you can feel the opposite effect when they come in the room and they're all negative, and somebody sees that somebody's negative and they rush over, and then by gosh, you see love pop right up out, because these people are trying to console them, they're trying to comfort them, they're trying to make them feel better. And so love, no matter whether you're an atheist, an agnostic, or a Christian, a Buddhist, a Muslim, or a Hindu, love shows its face. Love is a true, powerful energy out there that maybe science can't exactly explain, you know, but nonetheless, all of us, regardless of our backgrounds, our upbringing, our faith, or beliefs or not beliefs or whatever, all of us have found that truth, that nugget of knowledge on our journeys through life. You find somebody you're in love with and you marry them, you've experienced it. You see somebody smile at you and you smile back to them, you just shared love. It's a universal language that I believe explains the word divine.
I do too. I totally do that. But I go further. I'm going to say unconditional love.
Yeah.
Because to me, divine, it would be unconditional means we have there's no plan, no conditions. I just love you. I don't expect anything from you. I don't want anything from you. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to be this or that. I just love you.
Yeah.
That to me is creator right there.
I don't do an act of kindness for you and then run over to my chalkboard and make a mark so that
exactly.
I can show you later.
And I don't keep lists on you that you didn't do this or you didn't do that, you know. I mean, supposing, you know, as a parent, we gift our children things, we want to give them things, you know, and then of course we watch them and see how they behave towards that beautiful gift.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, I think we've
that's a perfect example, Barbara.
Yeah.
That is a perfect example. You give a kid a toy and you see that kid abusing that toy, you go in there like, well, that's gratitude for you. I went and spent some hard-earned money and got you that toy, and look what you're doing to it, you know? Well, our Creator isn't sitting there saying, look what you've done with the earth that I gave you, you know? He's letting us tear it up. He's letting us do what we do.
Because He gave us the responsibility for this gift. That's why.
Same thing
you do for a child. You give them a gift, you give them that responsibility. And there you go. Okay, you're going to destroy this, you're going to wreck it, you're going to mess it. The consequences or the results are what you're going to experience. And that's the same thing we've done. We were given such an extraordinary gift, this Mother Earth and life.
But in our Creator's infinite wisdom, this world was created in a manner in which that we'll kill each other off before we destroy this planet.
Everything. Creator gave us everything we needed already.
Yeah.
We didn't need to create anything. We didn't need to make anything. We didn't need to make anything better.
That's right. But
everything here, medicines, water, clean air, food, beauty, health, everything was here already. What happened?
Yeah, the thing about it, and what I meant by what I said about, you know, how this earth basically will heal itself over time. We make mistakes. Ever since the day we were born, we figured out ways to get ourselves in trouble. And we make mistakes with each other, we make mistakes through life, and our Creator had enough foresight to see that, okay, we're going to be busy just trying to find the difference between right and wrong, so I'm going to set this system up so that it will take care of them when they learn how to use it properly. It will do the job necessary to feed and house every single one of them and end all the wars. If people could only understand the gift that we've been given, being as amazing as it is, the environmentalists, they're all worried about the planet. They're all worried about saving the planet. They need to be worried about saving each other, and they need to be worrying about working in harmony with that gift in order to make this world the vision of what we all talk about all the time. You see what I mean? In my book it said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God, and the meek shall inherit the earth." And if you sit down and pick that apart and understand what that says, you're going to find a profound meaning in your heart. You're going to look at life just a hair bit different than you ever did before. You know, it's easy to go out and start a war. It's a little more work to go out there and be the peacemaker, especially when everybody's trying to disagree on everything under the sun. Including the sun. Is the sun 93 million miles away, or is it right here underneath the dome? There are actual people arguing over that. Meanwhile, somewhere on the other side of the planet, somebody is losing their life or their family or starving or sick or whatever. And there are societies throughout the history of time, the Native Americans had learned to work in harmony with nature, and they were thankful for everything they got. They learned that there were certain plants to eat and certain plants not to eat. There were certain plants that could be used for medicine. There were certain things. And if you respected nature, and if you were thankful for everything around there, and if you didn't send Grandpa off to the doggone old folks home, instead you kept him around as a, you know, when he was born a child, and then he goes back into the great beyond as a child. You see what I'm saying? That's the difference.
So I just think that, you know, speaking of gratitude and gratitude for everything, and becoming arrogant and privileged, you know, we've made a huge shift away from this knowing, this connectedness. You see, in the old way, before technology and before organized religions came in, people were connected. I call it the conscious or tribal consciousness. You know, as tribes or groups of people, we had a connectedness, a consciousness of our place, of our relationship to the forest people, our relationship to the spirit of the plant people, the medicines.
Yep.
These medicines, so a lot of times the anthropologist, archaeologist, or the authorities say the Indian people must have, you know, let's say, studied or died learning about which plants you could eat and which plants you couldn't eat. But that's not true. They can't breach this big gap that they don't understand. Indian people, they don't understand the connectedness that these people had to nature, to mother,
yep,
to the spirit, because these people. And even today, this happens. When you go into dream time, for instance, or when you go on a vision quest, we call it an ambalecha. It's a ceremony where you go off for 4 days and four nights all by yourself, and you build an altar there to go to pray to Creator, Great Spirit, and seeking guidance or help. Now, a spirit, a plant medicine spirit, for instance, will come to a person and say, "This is the medicine that will help this illness," and they would take that person from their body and fly them to where it's found on the earth. And that person doing that vision quest would remember this, and when they came back and finished up their vision quest, they would go to the people and they would say, "I found a medicine, I was given a medicine, and spirit, great spirit, gave this to us, and this is how those medicines, spirit of the medicine and creator, help the people. So the same thing with the peyote, the medicine of the peyote, the ayahuasca, the medicine of the ayahuasca. All these ancient medicines were given to the people through creator, through a vision. Okay, they didn't go out there in the woods and start, you know, wolfing down this and wolfing down that. Say, well, let me see if this is going to heal.
Yeah.
So let me
trial
let me see
by error.
trial by error, right? So, but that's what the scientific community believes, because they cannot leap that huge gap that they have disconnected themselves from the sacredness of nature and creator's gift to us.
Yeah, and the scientific community can't explain why it is that animals, by nature, when they're not feeling good, they got a bellyache or something's wrong, they will go out and they will eat grass.
That's right.
How do they know that? And how do you know, how does your body know when I'm lacking in salt, my body craves salt? When I'm lacking in any mineral that's supposed to be there, my body craves it, you know?
Yeah. And so speaking of that, if you listen to your body, if you go into that place where you can be silent, silence the monkey mind, and you listen and you ask your internal, you know, truth meter or the wisdom within you that Creator gave every one of us, it's not just the wisdom in you. When you go inside and you connect with that essence of yourself, you are actually connecting with Creator.
Yep. And I
you go in and you ask and you will receive an answer.
I think on the organized religion, I think that at some point in history that goodness was literally hijacked for profit.
That's right.
And the egos and the power trips of, you know, guys and gals that put themselves, adorn themselves with fancy robes and thrones and stuff like that, they're not supposed to be doing that, because none of us are gods and none of us are better than the other. We're all created equally, you know? And so if you're the pastor of a church and you're standing up on a pedestal and you think yourself to be higher than the person sitting down in the pew, then you're sadly mistaken. You're fooling yourself.
Well, even the Catholic Church, you know, you have to say that the way the Pope and priests are presented, they are not the Father.
Nope.
They are not. So they're really usurping, you know, this sacredness for their own gain.
Yep.
And, you know, to me, anything that's organized, be aware of. So it's organizing people and how to get to Creator, but they're really interfering with the true nature of ourselves, because we are Creator. We are one with our Creator. So we don't have to go to a church. We don't have to kneel down. We don't have to tithe. We don't have, I mean, you would do that from your heart if you want to anyone.
Yeah.
Help anyone. But it's not, it's sort of, this is the madness to me of organized religion. It's like no one, Creator didn't say, oh, I'm going to create everything, but there's going to be some person standing between you and me.
Yeah.
that will tell you how to get to me. That's not what this is, that's not the truth.
In my book of faith, Jesus said that no man comes unto the Father except through me. And, you know, Jesus being, you know, the way that I believe.
And you know what? I'm going to jump in here, because what you said is exactly true. But what is it that Jesus, Yeshua, told us how to live?
Basically humble and to be taking care of one another, and that we didn't need no intermediate between us and God. We needed to speak to God directly, you know?
Also to love, to be forgiving, to be compassionate,
yeah.
To be tender. This is the way through Yeshua.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the teaching. This is how I see it.
Yeah, you're not praying to the pastor of your church. You're praying to your God. And
and you're not going to some guy in a box who you sit down and you say, okay, I've done this sin, I've done that sin, and he's going to make everything all better.
Yeah, he's going to be the negotiator, like your attorney with the judge, you know.
And give me money for that.
Yeah.
See, just that? Like, don't you see this? It's like, but the millions and millions and millions, think of it, the millions of people who are lost.
Yeah.
Because they believe these people. They believe these lies.
Well, I tell you what, I believe nature is a gift from our Creator, and I don't need any intermediate. I don't need anybody to speak to nature. I can speak to nature myself. I can sit out there and by my actions and my word and my love, I can get a response from nature. I can communicate with nature. Animals, when they look at me, they're not afraid of me. Frogs still sit by me. They don't take off. You know how frogs, they like to scream and peel out whenever you come by. They don't do that anymore. And so that tells
Looking at that, to me, Shaz, is that is sacred. That is divine. Because the creatures are created also by, you know, Creator with love.
They're
and
physically
joy.
Responding to the way that I present myself to them and the way that I respect them. They respect me in return.
But that's being, but you're being touched by Creator because you have that good heart. You have that love, that heart. You know, to me, it's not just a separate thing. It's being one with that little turtle or that little frog, that little rabbit, that fox, that bear. They are all created. God's creation.
I believe that as well. You know, and that's why I asked the question on there about the truth. You know, what is the truth? You know, there are people out there saying a lot of terrible things are going on in this world, and maybe they are. And if they are, then we really, as a society, have to address these issues and, you know, try to overcome the evil. And people always kind of, you know, believe that it's so terrible that there's nothing that they can do. But for some reason, it was laid on my heart, you know, from whatever higher power is out there, it was laid on my heart to say a phrase about a candle. And I actually wrote it down in the story that I wrote about Goliath. That if you got a dark room, a dark cave or whatever, and you light one candle, that darkness can never win as long as there's one candle lit. And each one of the people out there in this world, in my view, are candles. And if you keep your candle lit, other people have enough light, they can walk around without stubbing their toe. And the more candles that we can get lit out there in this world, the less the darkness can overcome. But just one candle by itself will keep a room from being completely dark. Does that make any sense?
Well, yes, it does. And what I'm taking from what you're saying, because we talk about the light within ourselves, like the spirit within you is the light.
Yeah.
The spirit within each one of us is that light, but it's not just that light; it is Creator.
Yeah.
It's so. And I look at everything like that. I look at, so we're talking about the animals, you know. I mean, it was a while ago, not too long ago, you know, I was just sitting by myself outside in nature, just loving. I was really getting fed, you know, and I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I was getting fed, and I was feeling joy, and I was feeling gratitude. The tears are just coming because I'm feeling this wave of love and joy about being there, what I'm seeing and what I'm experiencing, the miracle and beauty all around me. And I started realizing, you know, how, what a gift Creator gave us, this gift, and we are destroying this gift. We are harming the creatures. We are harming the water, the gift of water. And I felt a sadness come into my heart, and I was talking to Creators, saying how sorry I was, how very, very sorry I was, how we, as the children of you, are destroying this gift. And I just felt this wave of sorrow, you know. So I'm sitting there weeping for gratitude and joy, and I'm weeping for some, like, having this experience.
Trust me, I understand exactly where you're at. I'm telling you, I understand that, you know. We got the power, literally, to do things about things that are around us. You know, I started off working on this pond that I wrote in the story about Goliath. And it wasn't just the pond itself, it was the struggle with life and the things that are going on in the world. That there was a profound message within that story. But I got the power where I could go down there, I could have broke that dam. I could have I could have drained all the life-giving water out of that pond, and I could have destroyed that. That's how much power I had. I could have affected every living creature in that planet. I could have took and sprayed pesticides and everything, herbicides all over that thing, and I could have literally turned that little piece of property into dust. But what I chose to do instead was I chose to go down there and work and build that dam, and I took the pond skimmer and I skimmed off the scum so that the sunlight could shine through and bring life down into the plants at the bottom of the pond and introduce more living creatures in there to work with me. And I kept on doing this, and I saw a physical change in the environment around me. I saw nature literally watching as I was doing what I was doing, physically seeing trees get healthy, physically seeing live, beautiful birds that I'd never even seen before showing up on this property. You go out there and there's a symphony of nature going on. You can hear the crickets, the frogs, you can hear the birds, you can hear life. I mean, there's so much life going on, and I feel like that I helped it happen. With the gifts that were given to me and the love in my heart and a little bit of elbow grease and some faith, I literally have been bringing this place back to where it should have been all along. This is what I believe could really be done with this world that we live in. If more people could read that story and more people could find their Goliath in a pond or a stream or, you know, even in their just their backyard and focus on that and see how far that they could, how close that they could get to nature, but how far that they could literally take things from the sickness that it is to the glory that it actually could be. You know, I don't know how much more, how I can say it to make anybody understand. I don't know how loud I can shout it to get people in this world to believe, not just in themselves, but in their creator, in the world, and the possibilities of where we could actually go. You know, I play this thing all the time about the dream. I believe in the dream. I believe that we were given the potential to, if we chose to do so, and it has to be a choice, if we chose to do so, we could literally, with all the things that we've been given, we could literally bring about a heaven on earth. And if I were God, which I'm not, but if I were God, and I wrote, I told some people to write a book about what would happen in the end times if all things, stayed the way that they were going as a warning, and I come back and I look down there and my creation was working hand in hand and they got it. They understood the meaning of life. They were showing each other love and being good caretakers. I would be so overjoyed.
Wouldn't we want to see? This is the piece that really gets to me, is that wouldn't anyone want to show gratitude, to be caring, the original stewards we were meant to be, caring and considerate and compassionate to this beautiful gift we were given, knowing that you were created, that this was created as a gift for us? Wouldn't anyone, you would think, you know, this would be normal behavior?
Yeah, and even to the extent to go on the extreme opposite, even if somebody did not believe that there was a higher creator, think about the world that you live in. Think about your actions and everything that you've done throughout your life and some of the regrets that you've had for things you may have said to somebody that you cared about, you know. Would you want to see this world go downhill and leave behind something that was so terrible? As to what, you know, it seems like every generation the world just kind of seems to get sicker and sicker. And knowing that we got capabilities to, with our combined knowledge and resources and gifts to actually make it better, wouldn't you at least want to, if you, even if you weren't a believer, to want to make this world better? People talk about it all the time. people talk about science. They say that the Earth is heating up due to man-made carbon emissions, and guys like me will come out and say, well, you know, there's a better way if you're really concerned about that. I don't believe in the science, but if I can help you out with a solution, here's an alternative that we can work on together. You see what I'm saying?
I do. And I also see the other side. I'm very, very well aware now of, more so now, I guess, than ever, about the other side, you know, that is very dark, and I'm going to say evil.
Well, and I agree.
I'm to the conclusion that after many years of questioning and asking for answers and guidance, my question to Creator was, who is behind such violence upon your creation?
Yeah.
Who would be so hateful and violent to want to destroy your creation? And an answer came, you know, Lucifer. Satan, devil, whatever you want to call it, whatever it is very dark and it is very evil because it seems to be bent on destroying this sacred creation. And it's not just the earth and water and air, it is the people. It is the children. And that's the only, it seemed right flat out answer.
Let me give a kind of an example of something that I've seen in my life. There's a story, I'm sure you're probably aware of it. People probably have seen this story before. It's a little deal called the Grinch Who Stole Christmas. Right? And this one particular individual, you know, he was going to be a rotten individual, and he went up and he went down and stole all the Christmas presents and trees and food and everything. And the next day, he was waiting to hear them all crying. He was waiting to hear them all boo-hooing, but they didn't. Instead, they raised their voices in glory and respect and love for one another, and Christmas came anyway. You see what I'm saying?
I do. For what? And I think that this is a very important message from Walt Disney.
Yeah. Well.
Whatever. I mean, it's like Grinch Who Stole Christmas. That says it. Just what I just explained. You know, there is this Grinch who has an agenda, who wants people to be in despair and weep and take the beautiful, you know, whatever it is, life, air, water, seed, you know. It's not just Monsanto, you know, shows it. We say, oh, Monsanto's doing this and this is doing that and this politician's doing that. But there's something behind. See, my question was, who's behind this? Because we have the elite, we have the cabal, we have the controllers, we have the Illuminati, we have the bloodline, we have all that stuff. But you know what? There is something behind these people manipulating to this point.
Well, I believe it. There's a darkness out there. You know, where there's light, there's darkness. There's goodness, there's evil, but whatever, you know.
But do you know that energy, that entities, that they feed off, that feeds off of anger, that feeds off of greed, that feeds off of jealousy, that feeds off of hatred, that feeds off of judgments.
Yep.
So when we are participating that way, we are feeding that entity that wants to destroy us. So you're participating right along with that by what you do, what you say, and how you behave.
Well, I agree. I agree 100%. You know, for whatever people think of Disney, I don't know the whole deal, and there's a lot of questionable things that Disney put out there. But that one message about Whoville, about how Christmas came anyway, the power of that love that they had for each other, it wasn't about the gifts, it wasn't about the trees and, you know, all the different things. But the story goes that, you know, when he heard this and he realized that there must be something else to Christmas, that he actually brought all the stuff back and had dinner with them and stuff like that. Goodness overcoming evil. That's the reason why I brought that particular, you know, memory up from a show that I watched.
Well, it's love. It's love. overtaking evil. That's what the, to me, that's what the message is.
Yeah. And
but so here's the thing, like these movies and big Hollywood and all that stuff, they kind of like are manipulated and they show us what's happening.
Yeah.
They also show us solutions. But they're not, you know, they're doing it here. Here's the stuff that's happening. It's not really good, but here's a solution. So it's good and evil, dark and light, positive, negative, all in one, all wrapped up in one.
Well,
to me, it's like something, it's part of a gift to us. I mean, it's almost like, okay, so you cannot have the light without the dark, right?
Yep. I think, and as crazy as it might sound, I think that some of the conspiracy theorists out there got it right when they said that groups like, you know, secret societies like Illuminati and all them, they have to tell you ahead of time they're getting ready to do something to you. For some reason or another, there's some sort of universal rule that says they can't just blindside you with something or trick you into giving away your soul, that they actually have to show you that they're getting ready to do something terrible to you to give you the opportunity to defend yourself to whatever extreme necessary. You see what I mean?
I'm going to agree with you on that because I think there is a universal law. If we believe in a creator and, you know, an almighty one who knows all and who creates everything, meaning that created the imbalance, created the balance, created light, created dark. You know, like I had an experience with what the Kogi elders in South America, Colombia, call the sorcerers. You know, I call them the dark ones or the dark entities. They call them the sorcerers. And these sorcerers, I went to visit them in a dream. I asked for help from Spirit, Creator. I said, help me to become a better person, to help in a better way. I want to, you know, help the Mother Earth and help life in a better way. So show me how to do that. And I was taken to this barren, barren, dead landscape. But there were four figures on a little rise. And they were hooded and cloaked. I couldn't see who they were, so I flew energetically to see who they were, and I saw evil. And I came back into my body in a position of invoking, which is holding my hands up like in a prayer, like, and I started calling on all the light beings, all the good ones, or the Tungashala, Great Spirit, Grandmother, Grandfather, I called Jesus, I called on Mary, I called on God, I was calling everybody that I knew in my heart, in my whole being, was divine and of the light and that could eliminate this evil. I was working hard. And when I finished, they remained, these beings. And I heard them say, you cannot eliminate us. We are part of creation. But we can be held at bay by what you were doing, which is what was I doing? I was praying and I was invoking what I knew in my heart, my whole being, what that was powerful and divine, sacred. And they said, we are looking for windows of opportunity. The windows of opportunity, they told me, were greed, judgments, jealousy, and hate. Those four things that we have a choice to choose, either to do it or not, right?
Yeah.
And they said, you cannot eliminate us. We are part of creation. So there is a universal law, what you're talking about. The universal law that says, yeah, the Illuminati and all the whatever have to give us a warning. They have to show us, but then it is ultimately Creator has given us the gift of free will, ultimately up to us.
To choose which side to go on. I get it. Look, I understand there's people out there with doubts about all kinds of things, spiritual or, you know, even, you know, otherworldly, that they don't understand. Well, I personally don't understand it either. I got to understand it from every bit of information that I've learned throughout my entire life. And my version of seeking the truth out there means I really seriously want the truth. And I have to be able to discern between fact and fiction and reality. But I'm not going to close my eyes to other truths out there. Until all this is revealed, we're all in the same boat. We're all in the same exact matrix or world or whatever. And it only takes a little bit of common sense to see the path that humans are on right now, with the wars and the destruction and the propaganda and the people struggling for power and trying to build their stairway to heaven and all this kind of stuff, it only takes a little bit of common sense to see the difference between right and wrong. You only got to stick your finger in the fire once to know that it hurt, it burnt. We don't have to keep repeating that as a human race. Whether you believe or you don't believe, the fact remains, we're still in the same boat. We're still under the same dome, the same globe, or the same flat plane. And all the time that we spend fighting amongst each other, lying to each other, stealing or harming each other, or doing things wrong, and neglecting and disrespecting nature and all the gifts that have been given us, you see the sickness in people's hearts and minds. You can't not see it. When you walk down the road and you see that somebody just doesn't look healthy, you have to ask them why. You have to ask yourself why. You have to ask this whole world why. Why are these people sick? You know, why are we fighting over resources that are so incredibly abundant on this planet? Why is anybody in this world even starving? And if somebody wants a home, why can't we put a shelter over their head? Those are choices. Those aren't things that are out of our reach. You know, our governments can amass armies. They can amass machinery and food and medical and all kinds of stuff, and they can go over and they can bomb somebody completely into the Stone Age if they choose to do so. Question is, are we going to support and allow that? Are we going to say, no, we need to come to the table and sit down and figure this out in a peaceful manner so that you're not destroying that side of the world, because we actually kind of need that side of the world. We need what nature has provided over there. We need these people. You see what I'm trying to say here? You know,
I do. I see it, and it's sort of like, again, it's, I think of the people who, the homeless people. I'm up here in the country, and I don't go to the city. Well, I haven't been to New York City in years, but I had to stop going there because of the energy was really disturbing to me. I live in the country. I live on the land, you know. I've always lived that way. But when I did go to the city years and years ago, and I was, like, stunned to see people on the street, homeless people. I was like, I never saw anything like that in my life.
Yeah.
I never saw, and I was like, stunned at the people just walking by, nobody looking, nobody paying attention.
Yeah,
and
you ever
want to
do
wow.
a social experiment, sit down off the side of the road and observe as you count the number of cars or people that fly by an individual in trouble. You know? And then, crazy as it sounds, you're going to find at least one of those people is going to stop. You know, somebody is going to stop. And if nothing else, to ease their own conscience, to hand them some money and say, look, I did a good deed, see you later. You know. You see?
But like you said, they're homeless.
Yeah.
Put yourself in their shoes. But these homeless people, they're people. They're human beings. They had bad luck. Something happened. You know, I mean, but people look at these homeless people as, like, not even human. Like,
yeah.
They're like the scourge, you know?
And then that's the whole key about the whole difference between goodness and evil, you know, and the candle and the lack thereof a candle. You know, if you ain't got a candle and the cave is completely dark, then it's dark. You start lighting up that candle, and the more candles end up in that room, not only does it get warm, there's plenty of light to go around, and everyone out there has the potential to be a candle in somebody's darkness. And, you know, it's that energy that you put off that could actually be that. It could be broad daylight out. You could be a candle. You know what I'm saying?
There was an incredible movie I watched, a documentary about this woman in Manhattan. She had an apartment. She had a job. You know, she lived there. And every day she'd walk down the street, and out on the end of the block was this little greengrocer, you know, down there in New York City. There's lots of those little stores, right? And they have all their little bins outside with fruits and veggies and stuff. And then you go inside, and it's all filled with stuff, you know? And she'd go by there, and there was always this homeless man. He was Japanese. But he'd be sitting out there with his, in a little box. He's had a little crate he's sitting on or whatever. And, you know, she kind of like would nod to him or whatever. And he had these watercolors. He was a painter, I guess. He'd making these watercolors. And she would purchase a couple to help him out and so on. And this went on for, you know, quite a while. And then winter came, and she was kind of like thinking, well, where is he? You know, well, no, he's there, but the grocer guy put up a plastic, little plastic tarp there. So he would be out there on the sidewalk behind this plastic tarp with all those little belongings, still selling his watercolors. And she just could not get this man out of her mind, you know. So she'd talk to him and get a little bit, you know, to know him more and more over the years. And she decided that this is impossible. She says she just can't let this man stay out there in the middle of this winter on that sidewalk. He was an old man. So she took him home. She asked him, would you like to come home with me? I have a little extra bedroom and, you know, I'll make you some dinner and whatever and so on. And her plan was to find help for him. You know, like get some social organization to help this man, right? So the story, to the long story short, come to find out, his paintings were his memory of being in the Japanese internment camps when he was a boy. And his parents and pictures of that and all these watercolors and everything. He had a story. He was a professor.
Wow.
This guy was a professor. And he wound up, bad luck stuff, whatever, and wound up on the street as a homeless man. And the man was brilliant. He had a beautiful story, you know, an amazing story. And she helped him. They got a social organization to get an apartment for him, you know. And it was a happy ending, you know. And here this beautiful man who was out on the street, he was like 80-something. Nobody paid attention to him. You know, the grocer guy put up a tarp for him, which was okay, but this woman stepped into, you know, and he was in her house for a couple of years before the social people could get him a place. So a couple of years, she was living with this man in her apartment. The story is very sweet because, you know, you're living with a stranger. You're bringing him into your home. And there's ups and downs and there's things happen. But it all was beautiful because it was a story of the heart, of the most biggest heart. And beautiful caring, and this human being, this man, and it doesn't matter whether he was a professor once or not, you know, that was just his story, but he was so grateful, and he went on to be in this little home, apartment building where he was. He started teaching people painting and classes. He became a useful person, a connected person, giving, you know.
Well, those are the kind of stories that I love to hear. I mean, you know, there's a lot of the stories out there that are terrible stories, and if the truth is that down in Texas that there's things going on down there that shouldn't be going on, we need to find out. We need to figure out ways to help those people out. I mean, there's a lot of people that are going down there and doing things, you know, but somehow we got to, even if it's just with the power of our words, motivate the world to making things right, you know. I really sometimes feel a little bit helpless because if things are really like that out there in the world, I want to try to make it right, you know, but it's not my job by myself or your job by yourself or Two Dog who blessed us with his presence. He's here. It's not our jobs alone to save the world. We got to, all of us have to be that candle. You see what I'm trying to say here?
I do. I absolutely do. And it's daunting. And I think that, you know, your good heart and your compassion, you know, and there are a lot of people like that. And thankfully, you know, like this woman who stepped up to the plate, you know. There are a lot of stories like that, you know. Hi, Two Dog.
How you doing, Two Dog?
How you doing, guys?
Pretty good.
I want to say hello to my relatives, and you know, the thing about the people on the street like that, I lived several years on the street myself, eating and taking out at garbage cans and stuff like that. You know, I've had to do it myself. And it was, and I'm getting choked up about even thinking about it, but some people just walk by this little, you know, I was like 9 or 10 on the street, you know, that's about my time when I was out there. And the people that walk by you like you're not there was just incredible. But, you know, even if somebody walks up to you and asks you if you want a cup of coffee, it's just, it's heart-touching, even if they ask you that.
What a lonely, scary feeling, Two Dog. I mean, there was a time in my life, maybe 25 years ago or so, I was nearly in a position where I was going to be homeless, and it was terrifying. I just couldn't imagine it, you know, no one can imagine.
The thing, J-Crow, that got me the most when I was out there, of course, I didn't do that. I didn't do what this guy was saying, but he told me, while you're on the street, you have one law, and that one law is do unto others before they do it to you, because they're fixing to.
Yeah. Well, that was the law out there, because it's self-preservation. It's survival.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what it is.
I wonder if people in this world ever think about the ramifications of their own actions, you know? It's like that story I keep talking about. There was a couple little Palestinian girls, and the reporter asked these two Palestinian girls, said, "Do you ever want peace with Israel?" And the two little girls said, "Well, no, we hate Israel. They killed our mommy and daddy." Well, if you flip it over on the other side of the fence and ask two Israeli girls the same question, they might just give the same exact answer. And at some point in time, we got to learn how to break these chains of violence and hate and destruction. It's kind of like that old story about the Hatfields and McCoys. They fought for generations, according to the story, and at some point, they didn't even know why they were fighting anymore. You see what I'm saying?
What? It's like that old metal song. I hate to say it, but peace sells, but who's buying?
Yeah, that's the whole deal. And you know, if we want a better world, it's up to us to do it. You know, I feel like our Creator gave us this and gave us the choice of what we do with it. And right now, we're kind of squandering what would be an otherwise amazing gift.
Well, I think people need to get mad.
Yeah.
In a good way. I think people need to say, "Hey, wait a second. I am not gonna be pushed into hurting others. I'm not gonna be pushed into destroying things that are a gift to me. I'm not gonna be pushed or manipulated by those people who have an agenda." I think people need to stand up and get mad about this.
Yeah. That little clip that I play about the ants, that to me is so incredibly profound, because the grasshopper's sitting there telling them, because one said, "Oh, it's just one little puny ant. Do I worry about him?" And he said, "Well, you know, when they outnumber us 100-1, when they finally realize that, our way of life is over." And that is so incredibly on point with our leadership and the global elitist of the world, you know. The people up there in the high places want the money that, you know, the movers and shakers, so to speak. You know, if we ever realize that all of our candles together could shine a light on the darkness unlike they've ever seen in their worst nightmare, then these things would change. You see what I'm saying? If you don't approve of something and you still sit there, it's like if you got like a group of friends and you're all standing around, they're all telling racial jokes about, you know, different cultures or whatever, and then some of them think it's funny and you don't think it's funny, you don't have to stand there in the midst of that crowd. You can either voice your opinion or you can turn your back and walk away to show your disapproval. You see what I'm saying? The same thing would apply with your governments out there. Your people that we sit around and complain about the world in general and the state of affairs. Well, by not saying or not doing something positive toward this world, you're literally sitting there being complicit to all the evils of this world.
Well, if there was a politician or a leader who was rag poor, who didn't have a mansion, who didn't have a Rolls Royce and a couple of islands and a big Learjet and all that stuff, and they were a politician, I'd pay attention to that person.
I would too.
I'd be interested in what they have to say, and I'd feel like, okay, this is a legitimate, caring person because they don't have all this money stuff. Those people, that they have so much money, it's mind-boggling to me.
And you ask a poor person, I had the best meal that I ever had in my life, and the most memorable meal that I ever had in my life was, it took place in a town called Porterville, California, and there was this little bitty tiny house. I mean, it was before tiny houses were cool. All right, but they were so poor, they were living in basically the equivalence of a little shack, and I had fried potatoes with them. That's all they had. They had some fried potatoes, and they had some salt and some butter to cook the potatoes in, and I was a complete and utter stranger there with a friend of mine. It was raining outside. We were out of gas, and we were trying to find my biological father, and they took us in out of the rain and fed us. And had a conversation with us and treated us like family and was interested in what we were looking for, interested in our stories and stuff like that. But that was, by far, if I could have had a choice to eat in the fanciest restaurant with the most wealthy, whatever people, the most famous people on the planet, or sit there in that house and have dinner with those people, that's where I would be, in that little tiny house in Porterville, California, with the poorest people that I'd ever met in my life.
Well, Two Dog, isn't it the Indian way, is when somebody comes to that door, we say, come on in and eat, no matter
yes.
what we have,
yes.
no matter what
I've
we
done,
have.
I do it every day. Every day.
No matter what you have, you share.
Yeah, it's a sharing thing. It's we, in other words, guys, what we were taught before the boarding school, okay, is that everybody in the tribe is important. I don't care who you are, you know. And me being a leader, I'm just a spokesman. That's it. But everybody's important. And what we used to do with, we thought, is that everything is we, us, and ours.
Yeah.
We shared everything. If one didn't have, and I had, then I shared that with him or her.
And I want to tell you that the way of a warrior, the warrior was not a warrior and decorated with eagle feathers because they killed a lot of people.
That's
a warrior
right.
was someone who fed the elders, who took, you know, fed, made sure the elders.
Fed the elders, killed them.
Yeah.
You know, something you said right there is so incredibly profound that it just reminded me of something that I wrote down, either in the story that I wrote or whatever. It was at the end of the book that I wrote. I wrote a message to dedicate the book that I wrote to certain people. And I dedicated the book first to the veterans of the world. All right, not the veterans of just any specific nation, but the veterans to the world. And there's this thing that goes on, because when people find out you're a veteran, and I don't know, it's been going on for at least a couple, 2 or 3 years or whatever, and I don't even know where it actually came from. But there are people who, when they find out you're a veteran, they'll say thank you for your service. Well, it's appreciated, but I always turn around and I say to them, thank you for your service. Because while all of our men and women were out there fighting for what they believed to be freedom and justice and whatever, you know, for whatever reason they got there, nonetheless, they risked their safety, risked their sacrifices so that other people could have freedom to, you know, be free as we can be in current circumstances. So I tell them, I said, It's the waiters. It's the waitresses. It's the busboy. It's the dishwasher. It's the trash man. It's the police officers. It's all the people out there who had served their community and kept home alive while all these individuals were out there supporting their nations or doing whatever it is that they did to, that they believe was fighting for freedom and justice and trying to protect the world from harm or whatever. But I wanted them people to understand that the people at home, it doesn't matter what job you've got. See, when Two Dog said something about how every single person in that tribe was important, I feel the same way about the person that brings me my food at the restaurant. Sure, I'm paying for a service, so what? That person took a piece of their life, and they came over there, and they served me, whether it be for the financial, that they needed a job or whatever, but nonetheless, with a smile on their face or whatever, they came over, and they took a piece of their life, and they served me, and to me, that is the most honorable and respectful thing, to serve your community. And so it doesn't matter if you're a teacher, a trash man, a janitor, or where I feel that those people are just important to the overall grand scheme of things as the man that's out there on the front line. What do you think?
I totally agree with you. Matter of fact, if they do that, they're warriors in the tight.
So I'm telling the people out there, thank you for your service. Thank you for the honor of allowing me to be a servant to you.
What I've learned in my lifetime that pretty much every day that I wake up and I greet the grandfather as the sun comes up, my ceremony that morning, is that from I thank him, of course, for allowing me to wake up and my heart is still beating to do what I do. But it's time that, in my mind, that we go to people of all color. Because color is nothing. It's a thing about being a human being. And start looking that if someone is down, put your hand down. It doesn't matter who it is. Yeah.
No, and
that's
it should.
That's how we help our how we deal with our relations. That's another point.
It's the differences that they've used to divide us, to even give us a thought that there was a difference between us. Like we've done this on this show many times. We've given an example about you put two babies, or many babies from all different cultures, all different races or whatever, in a playpen, and they'll play together and love on each other and respect each other and, you know, just do what babies do. They don't know any differences. It's the moment that society puts a label on each of them and puts a difference on each other that those differences become even an issue. You guys agree with that or disagree?
I totally agree with you because racism is taught to generations. I would just say it that way.
Yeah.
Grandfather tells father, father tells son, son tells his son. It's the same deal. It's a revolving generational thing. Racism as a baby is not even seen. They don't do that. It's got to be taught. And I'll give you a little story about that. And this is a true story. There was a car on the road and it hit a telephone pole right out front of my grandmother's house. And I was the very first kid. I might have been 12 at the time. And I run out to see, you know, what I could do. I'm calling for the police, you know, the police department and the ambulance and stuff. I was actually doing something when that was like that. And I noticed there was a woman in the car. But because the woman was not dressed like a woman, they thought it was a guy. Then they found out, oh, it's a woman. So they didn't really want to deal with it. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is kind of crazy. All right. So I'm looking at this, and here comes this grown man that tries to help get her out of the car, right? He immediately looks down at me which I'm just, and the first thing comes out of his mouth is, I hate you. Well, I didn't even know what for. So, the last thing I told him was, as soon as we get her out of this car, the first thing I'm going to do for you is pray for you if something's wrong. Because I don't even know who you are.
Yes.
But he immediately hated me.
So how could he hate you and not even know you? That's the deal.
Yeah. He's like, well, you're not part of the dominant society and I don't like you. I hate you. Well, I don't even know who you are.
Well, it all brings us back full circle to what is the truth. And the man, you know, because of a label or because of a color or a difference, found that his truth was he hated you. That's a terrible truth. That's
right.
A terrible way to get a truth.
Well, that's not truth. That's confusion to me. That's confusion, and it's information that he got that has no basis on any truth at all, no fact. It's prejudice. It's just like a reaction to someone who looks different or who is different. There's a lot of people like that who are very confused. They don't really know the source of that hatred. They're just acting out according to what they've been told.
Well, it's sad.
So they lost the truth for sure. They missed the truth.
And I respect and honor too, Doug, for saying, you know, something he could have went off and says, well, you know, bleepity bleep, you this and that or whatever. But instead he said, brother, I'm gonna pray for you. You know? And sometimes that is harder than swinging a fist, you know? It's so much easier to fall into, you know, okay, that's it, you want to fight? You know, whatever. Two Dog didn't do that. He said, I'm gonna pray for you. And more people need to try to at least. I told my wife just yesterday, we had a conversation about something going on. I said, you know, being a diplomat's not always easy, to try to be the peacemaker, you know, in between two parties that are not agreeing on something, you know. It's a lot of work. And, you know, you don't always get respect.
Oh my God, yes it is.
You know, you've been there.
Since I took my position, my nation has become more diplomatic than ever. And it was such an honor, and I have to admit, it was an honor to raise the Mexican flag out here and set with the individuals in Mexico. And then, you know, as we were sitting and eating together and talking together, I realized myself that, you know, really, truthfully, we're not that different worldwide. We're not really, you know, culturally, yeah, maybe, okay? But everybody loves their children. Everybody loves their families when they come home. Everybody sits and has their meal with their family, laughs and cuts up with their family, their children, plays with their children. I do too. Nobody's really that different, you see.
From all nations, brother, from all nations, people do the same thing. That's what they're, the whole purpose. And somehow or another, we've lost our way, you know, when I say we, and I'm kind of painting with a wide brush, I'm talking about we as a family, the entirety of all of humanity, for all the numbers of people that's on this planet. We've allowed a lot of things to happen. We've been pacifist, and things should have been spoken about that we didn't say nothing about, or we we gave up some freedom for some security, or whatever, you know, the case may be. You know, that's why when I'm talking about the truth out there and I'm seeing headlines from the alternative media and then I'm seeing kind of different headlines from the mainstream media and I don't know for a fact what's going on, I can't jump the gun and start saying, well, you know, look, this and that's going on and try to make everybody scared of the world. I don't want people to be scared of the world. I want people to be aware of the world, and I want people to be responsible of all the things that we need to address. And the only way to do that is like you do in your nation, where you guys pass around the talking stick, you know, or we come here together on the Knights of the Round Table, and we come here as equals from all different cultures and you know, spiritual backgrounds, and we can get along, and we can understand what each other is saying. And I say that the power of this word that we're using is so important to keep on saying, regardless of how many people hear it right now. These podcasts, they're up there. They're forever written into digital cyberspace. They're going to be floating around out there, and hopefully someday somebody will pick it up. And the words coming out of Barbara's mouth or Two Dog's mouth or mine will resonate with them, and they will finally get it. Their light will come on, and when that light comes on, a little bit more of the darkness goes away. And that's the whole key to everything right there. We know there's evil in the world. We've seen it. And the only way to fight evil is with goodness, is with love. You know, for negativity breeds negativity, positivity breeds positivity, and if you do something wrong in this world, some people call it karma. How many times do you got to have something happen to you before you understand? How many times do you got to watch your brothers and sisters fall before you're willing to stop it and pick them up?
This, the way I look at it, I call things that I see like this, you know, it's called the system of the focus. We have lost focus, to be honest. And I followed a man by the name of John Trudell since 1969, and he said some things that hit me quite well. A lot of problems is civilization has become the great lie.
Yeah.
There's nothing civil about it.
Well, what you said about focus, Barbara reminded me of that earlier. Because we were talking about how, you know, people have these abilities that they don't even realize they got. And, you know, I'm sitting here telling her about my trip in nature, and she's reminding me about my trip in nature and how I'm able to do that, and I'm not even... On the other side of the fence, I'm not recognizing that I was doing it to begin with. Do you understand what I'm trying to say here?
Yes, yes. Because here's my deal, and this is myself. To think about all this stuff since I've been a baby, growing up, of all the conflicts and everything that I've had, and to even think of being in this position. Everybody has power given by the Creator. Everybody has some kind of power. And if you use it correctly, that's good. That's your style. Okay, that's real good. But it can easily be taken away from you as easily as the Creator gave it.
Well, I agree. I've seen that in nature, because if you get arrogant and you disregard the respect of nature, nature will go back to whatever nature did before. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was sick, it'll go back that way. It's something to be said about...
It's just like I saw. Shaziz, and I apologize, and I give this back to you. Of course, we have chickens out here, okay? And I had a big old rooster out here at the time. And I saw this hawk started circling, and all of a sudden, you see two ravens pop up, and they fight this hawk off. And I saw this one of the ravens come by on the branch, and I saw the rooster come. And these two actually started talking to each other. You could hear the rock, rock, you know. And all of a sudden, you see this raven down the rooster and out. In other words, my chickens had ever, you know, and they actually had a conversation about it and then took out. So all of nature is not fighting. The only ones in nature that is fighting is us.
Yeah. it's that simple. You know, if you want to try a test sometime, walk into a room of happy people, and no matter how much they smile, you keep an angry look on your face. you just maintain that angry look and you'll watch the mood in that room change, because they're not, they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know what you're up to, you know. And that's power in just your presence, you know, just your actions. And so we got to be careful about what we read and about what we share with others, and the truths that we try to put out there. We got to be vigilant and discerning and vet the information coming to us, because we're in a spiritual war. There's no doubt in my mind about that. You know, regardless of what people want to say, you know, if you're a non-believer in a higher power, then just call it an information war, you know, because there's an agenda behind everything. People want you to be happy for a reason. They want you to be angry for a reason, you know, and whether it's on the good side or the bad side. I want you to be happy because I want to live in a world full of love. Some people want you to be angry and fearful and, you know, disrespectful to one another because they don't want you using that combined gift that you've been given. You look at it right here on this panel alone. You got a wonderful heart with the name Barbara, and you got Two Dog, and you got Shaziz. You got three wonderful people who love this world, and they're sharing this light with the world. And that ripple's going out. It's going into the chat room. It's going over through radios and people's cell phones and different networks and such. And it's spreading out there. And the more people that hear these words and are inspired to go out and at least smile on somebody just to see how it works, that's the true power. You know, we got things that we do in our life. Two Dog gets out there physically and does things for his community. So does Barber. So do I. We get out there and physically do things. But sometimes the tools that we have to work with are these computers and these words of wisdom and our life's experiences. And we're opening that heart of ours and pouring that love out to the world. And we believe we're getting results. And you got to believe in yourself. You got to take that word faith, and you got to use that word faith wholeheartedly. Whatever you believe in, if you have faith in it, if there's any kind of doubt whatsoever, you can't produce a miracle. If you doubt your own faith, if you doubt your own creator, if you doubt yourself, you know, Henry Ford said it best when he said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. What do you guys think?
Well, I'm going to say that don't get discouraged, because sometimes when you're doing, you know, when you're, whatever you're doing, if you're doing something good, or you're attempting to make an effort to help someone or to change someone or to share something with someone, and I mean, that person might turn away from you or go, yeah, right, or, well, I don't think that's true, or I don't think this is going to work, or whatever, however people react to you. Don't lose faith, because we don't know how Creator works. I feel that we're all seed planters, you know. You plant a seed in your garden, that spiritual garden, and you water it, and you know the sun's going to come upon it, and it's going to, Mother Earth is going to nurture it, and you're going to step around there every morning. You're going to go in, and you're going to look over that little seed, and you're going to say, how is it going? You know, that's a prayer. You're going to come back the next couple of days, you're going to see a little tiny green sprout come out. So, oh, look at that. Isn't that beautiful? Thank you so much. That's a prayer. So as a seed planter, when we talk to people or we share something, we don't know where it's going to go. We don't know how it's going to grow. We don't know if it's going to grow. We don't know when it's going to bloom. But it will in its time, according to Creator's law.
Yep.
So it's the same way with people. So don't get discouraged because you may not see somebody changing right away, or you may not, people might not say, oh, thank you so much, I love what you just said. And don't have the expectation. Just do what I call, do the sacred works. You know, be that seed planter.
You know, I say that truth is subject to the honesty and integrity or honor of the teller of the story. And so, you know, with that said, evil or fear can spread like the plague, just like love can spread like the plague. And it's a conscious choice that you got to make. You want to spread fear out there in the people's world, you know, truth is basically like my grandpa said about the golden, your truth, your honor, your word is like gold. And if you maintain it as such, that it's valuable. If your word is like gold, and you tell somebody you're going to do something, and you follow through, and you do it, and if for some reason you can't do it, you rectify that with them and make it right. See, that's keeping your word like gold. And so when you're telling about events out there in the world, if it's not as bad as you're dramatizing it, then there's a problem. You need to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, you know. So help you God, or whatever you believe. Nonetheless, I want to know what's going on in Texas. So if anybody lives in Texas, and they know of anything that's happening in Texas that is as bad, that we the people need to address, we got a platform to spread the message, and we'll utilize it for the proper purpose. We won't utilize Shaziz Radio or any of the other affiliated networks to make people afraid for nothing. We want to make people aware. We want to spread knowledge and peace, hope, and love for the world, because that's the kind of world we want to live in. That's what this is all about. The Knights of the Round Table isn't just a concept. The Knights of the Round Table is bringing all the brilliant minds and all the honorable souls to the table to share our experiences and our gifts with everybody out there in this world to make this world a better place. Because I believe our Creator gave us the tools, gave us the power to literally bring about a heaven on earth if we so choose to do so. If you work in perfect harmony with nature, the nature will work in perfect harmony with you and will bless you over and over and over again, like that seed being planted that Barbara just spoke of. Maybe you won't get to eat the apple off of that tree, that plant that you planted, but somebody down the line is going to benefit from your labor. And there ain't nothing in my mind more honorable than being a servant to your brothers and sisters around the world. That's what this show means to me. So what do you guys think?
Well, I think you're right. I think that, I think there is the memory of within every one of us, that memory, what we talked about earlier about the innate nature of ourselves, or the fundamental nature of our connectedness to creation and to Creator. And that you may be so far removed from it, or you may doubt it, or you may be in fear because of what's being pushed upon us or what we see going on. But within you, within every one of us, is that memory, that beautiful memory of paradise, that we lived here once in paradise, that it still remains, but we must embrace it. We have to also be it and want that and dream that and create that. It is there, ever present. It's not gone away, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's the choices that we have to make, is what do you want, how do you want life to be? What do you want to create? Because we have that power. We've been given that gift, you know. And that, to me, is to come into alignment with the original gift. You know, not only the original gift of this Mother Earth and everything that we ever needed here was present for us, but also ourselves and others as sacred, you know, as good people. You know, like Two Dog was saying, you sit down with people and, you know, and everybody wants the same thing. Everyone loves their family. Everyone sits down to dinner. And, you know, the majority of people still do that, you know. I think that there's other pieces. Every one of us has that red blood inside of our body that courses through and keeps us alive. Everyone has a heart. Everyone has organs the same. We're all identical. We all have a brain. We have eyes, two eyes. We have ears. We have, you know, hands. We have 2 feet. Everyone has the ability, the function of our cells, our lungs, and all the organs inside of us are identical. You know, like my heart isn't look different than yours, you know. It's just not. The blood that runs through me is the same that runs through you. You know, and so yes, my desire my wish, my dream, is a great majority of people have that same, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone, I think, wants peace. I don't think anyone, well, let's say there are some that want war, and those people are lost, you know, but they are our brothers and sisters, too. You know, and that's why I pray for them, you know, because I feel that they are lost. They're on the wrong track, in my estimation, you know, and they got caught somewhere. There are those that want war. There are those that are greedy, but I think the greater percentage of human beings want peace. They want to have their garden. They want to have their family healthy. They want their grandchildren and great-grandchildren to be healthy and live life joyously and happily. And they want a roof over their head. They want food. They want to share. So we're really all the same like that.
Well,
to be honest with you, every day I look at myself. And when I look at myself, you know, like I comb my hair and I look at myself a little bit, I've been what you could call a lifetime of war. Okay? I've got scars on me you would not believe.
Well, I believe
but
it, brother.
Still, the way I look at the scars is that's just the scar of what love I was trying to give to other people. If they didn't want to take it, it's up to them. That's their decision. So I pray for them. And as far as animosity, I hold no animosity to no one.
I want to give something.
But my prayer smoke goes up to the Creator. That's the main thing.
You know, in honor of what you just said, I want to give something to the world that I hope that everybody at least humors me. I want everybody out there listening to this radio show to go out and find some place that sells polished stones. And I want you to find one in there that you find so beautiful, and you buy that stone and you keep it with you at all times and put it in your pocket. Because I want to take you back to where we came from. When a baby's born into this world, the baby's born pure and beautiful. And you're holding in your hand a polished stone, and if you look at this stone and you really think back about the very first day of creation, you think about life. You think about what it must have looked like when our Creator put all of this together, how this stone is so beautiful. I'm holding in my hand right now a beautiful blue stone that's got a little bit of gray, kind of turquoise looking color in it. And it's just a beautiful stone. Imagine this. You're walking down the side of the shoreline and there are beautiful stones laying everywhere like jewels at your feet. That's what the world would have looked like when it was brand new off the store shelf. And over the years, this stone become encrusted with all kinds of dust and debris from everything from floods to, you know, wars and craziness that went on. And the stone, his beauty was covered up by all this dirt, this filth, this craziness. But somebody took the time to literally polish that stone up. And so now I have the honor, because of somebody taking the time to polish this stone, to hold a piece of beauty, a piece of creation in my hand that would give me a look back in time to what this world looked like on its very first day. It's so beautiful and it's so profound to look and see a baby that has just been born, and the innocence and the beauty and the magnificence, the amazing life that is right there before you. Under each one of you is that beauty, just like that stone. And in your journey through life, you've collected dust and you've collected hatred and sicknesses and stuff, and just imagine. Just imagine what if you took the time to polish yourself up like that stone, you could literally look in that mirror and you could see the real you. You could see the light that really shines. I want you to go out and find you a stone like that. I want you to go to find out wherever they sell rocks and buy you the most beautiful stone that catches your eye and I want you to hold it in your hand, and I want you to contemplate on this beautiful gift that we've been given. It is so incredibly amazing. I wished you could see through my eyes. To hold a piece of creation in my hand and want that for each of you. I want you to see what's in my heart. I want you to see through my eyes. I want you to see what we've been given. And I'm begging each and every one of you to help me polish off the dirt that has tore us apart, the dirt that has hid the beauty that is within each of us. Please, just humor me one time. Go out and buy that stone and sit down and contemplate. Sit by a pond, sit by a stream, sit there with your friends and your family and just look at that. That is a shiny, amazing example of what the first day of creation must have looked like. The kings and queens, which are you, walking down a beach with jewels at your feet. Beautiful clean water and wonderful air to breathe. Treating each other as if they were the most important, and you were the most important. You treated each other as you wanted to be treated, just like my Lord and Savior that I believe told us to do. That stone in your hand right there is a time capsule that was set there. It taught me a profound lesson. It taught me where I came from. It taught me that over the years, all the things that I've never been through, and the sermons that I heard about being in the Valley of Blessings, and those Valley of Blessings is kind of a misnomer, because during the Valley of Blessings, those are the worst times of your life and the most miserable things that ever happened to you. But if it were not for those times that you went through, if it was not for all that dust that had covered your body and soul and hid your true beauty, you wouldn't have the wisdom to share with people right now to tell that world where we could be as opposed to where we are. Good breaks.
Well, Shaziz, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing that, and I feel your heart, and I'm right there with you. You know, it's a beautiful thing to be able to hear you speak like this, and I just want to thank you for that. And I want to also thank you for allowing me to be here today with you, because I have to get going here, and
yes.
I just appreciate you so much. You know, you just really touch my heart and you fill my heart, and I'm just really happy to know you. I so much appreciate you here.
I feel the same way about you, and yeah, we all got to go because the show's coming to a close.
Well, I want to thank everybody for listening, and again, this opportunity, and Two Dog, lots of love to you too, and we'll be around the campus. See you around the campus.
Thank you again, Barbara, and thank you for
all
being
right
here.
Take care.
Two
go
Dog,
shop.
You got any last words of wisdom, brother?
One thing I can say to you, ladies and gentlemen out there, is one thing. It says in Christianity, and it's stated also the way I walk, is to have that one-on-one relationship with the Creator, God, whatever you may call Him. And I urge you, to look at every part of nature, the trees, that if the trees are gone, we breathe for each other. If the trees are gone, you suffocate, of course. All nature works in the balance of the circle. So I urge you to get out in nature and start looking at who you really are. And to understand that at every step you take on this earth, Mother, is a constant walk. Is a constant prayer, is a constant talk with the one-on-one relationship with the Creator. And that is the main important thing. And if any of your brothers and sisters are down out there, even if you're walking on the streets of the city, open your heart, look down, pick them up, and let them walk and give them something to smile about for that day.
Thank you, Two Dog. wonderful words of wisdom as usual, and it's always an honor to sit here at this round table with you folks. If you like what you heard here today, if you believe in the message enough to share it with somebody else. There's somebody out there that needs words of wisdom. Somebody out there just needs words of love. For whatever purpose, share it. Share it with somebody. Share it on your social media networks. Get out there and talk to people. Get out there and smile at people. Get out there and be part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem.
It's just this. I can say it real quick before we get off here that, you know, it's been a while since, you know, me and you have met. I have been on several stations with you. And, I've grown to honor you so much for what you do, my brother. And, Chunky, my heart, it goes to you.
I feel the same way about you, brother. You've been consistent all these years. You're still giving the same message that you were back then.
It's supposed to be. So, you know, I am who I am.
Yeah.
You, and we're not looking at nothing but love and to understand that we are the human being and you are my relation. No matter. It's time to work together for the benefit of the whole.
I agree. Folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Please share this podcast with somebody. Share a little bit of love. Somebody out there needs you. And if there's truth to be told, tell the truth with all honesty. That's the best we can do. In the world that we live in today, we need each other. We need our nature. We need our creator. We need all.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We're the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us from every nation come together and make that future a great
one. Woman! Man, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship.
a self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would
realize... Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, three dots where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rise that are quite something able. We're rock and mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right. Hey, hey, King Shazir's the Turtle. King Shazir the Turtle and the Knights of the Round Table.